Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. It's our Tuesday show, part one.
It's already Tuesday?
It's already Tuesday. We're ahead of the game. Just by walking in the door, we're ahead of the game. Isn't it funny the difference one day off makes in a weekend?
It does add to the splendor of your weekend, but it lengthens the work week. I know that sounds stupid, but on four-day work weeks, I always feel like it's the longest week.
I wonder why that would be.
I don't know.
I don't know, Kevin. Does Kevin think it's the longest week?
He had to work
Kevin
yesterday.
Kevin still worked.
Oh,
yeah.
Was Kevin
and
here?
Steve, you did a fine job with Amy Guth. I heard a lot of that. That was great.
Kevin and I and Amy, we did our best to make sure you guys
it was
could
exhausting
extend it.
Working with them, though. I mean, just really extended.
Divas? Two divas?
Yeah.
Who's more diva-like?
Steve.
Totally.
Yep. Yeah, that's all right. You learn from your experiences, though, don't you?
I don't know how Michael does it every day.
No, it's impossible. It's impossible.
What a weather weekend, though. I'm telling you, it was just...
Yeah, a little windy at times, but that's okay.
That's
we'll take
right.
that. The temperature was nice. But how would we survive here in America as a society if every weekend was three days off, 4 days on?
That's how it should be.
That would
We'd be
all right.
We'd be more productive.
I think so.
Because then you'd focus 5 days of work into 4 days,
4 days.
So you would work harder those 4 days.
They
See?
Actually did Come a study on that recently in Sweden. And the workers were more productive and happier.
See? Let's do it.
Let's
How do we change this?
Well,
get Jimmy DeCastro on the phone and Larry Wirt.
Talk to Trump and see if he'll okay that. I'm sure he would. He likes being proficient. You know, most of Europe take extended vacations. Like here in America, most of us get 2 or 3 weeks off per year. And usually you break it up. Sometimes you'll take them all at the same time. But in Europe, in most countries, they get like months off at a time. And Europe's been around a long time, Wendy. I saw in a history book, they've been around a long time.
I have one kid out of school, which is great, and 2.5 more days for Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan asked me as he was leaving for school today, he goes, Mom, are you scared? I said, about what? Donald Trump is probably going to be president.
It just hit him now?
Yeah, well, it hit all of us that really may be a fact.
I can prove once and for all that is impossible.
That's what you keep saying, but...
I have proof, though.
All right, well, I want to say I said, no, I'm not scared. And he said, you're not?
Yeah.
I said, what can I do? I'm going to cast my vote. If he wins, then you know what?
Suck it up.
That's all I can do.
I know.
Vote wisely.
With the emphasis on the first word in that phrase. here, I will now prove... beyond a shadow of a doubt that Donald Trump will not be the next president of the United States. I have hardcore evidence, absolute 100% proof. Ready?
Really?
Yeah.
I'm ready because
yeah.
I've been asking you every day and you say it's not going to happen.
It will be down to one of two people. It will be down to him
and
Hillary Clinton. Well, I'm building toward what I'm getting to. It'll be down to Donald Trump and probably Hillary Clinton. Definitely Hillary Clinton. Sorry, Bernie Sanders. All right. The reason he will not be our next president is this. If you go to Las Vegas and you look at the odds, they have Hillary Clinton at 2-1 and Donald Trump at 1-2, meaning if you bet $1, you would win $2. Las Vegas is in the business of making money. They're not in this to be cute or adorable. They want to make money. That's all they want to do is make money. So when they say he's got that kind of an odd of putting down a bet for $1 to get two, that's their way of saying... that's not going to happen.
I'm not basing my life decision on Vegas odds.
If you look at all their past history of this, they're flawless. They don't miss. They pick the winner every single time. They have never been wrong.
What about upsets?
In sports, not in presidential elections.
Things have changed this year.
Oh, it's 100% different than it normally is. But these guys study this to the smallest detail. They don't want to lose their shirts. They're Las Vegas.
I don't know, Bill.
Trust me.
What is wrong with this country that Vegas is predicting who's going to run the country? This whole thing is messed up.
If I were still a degenerate gambler, I'm still a degenerate, but I'm no longer a degenerate gambler. If I still was a degenerate gambler and I was in Las Vegas and I saw those kind of odds, I'd put everything down on Hillary Clinton. Everything. They've never missed.
Never.
They call it every single time since they've been doing these bets.
You sound serious because your voice has changed. It's deeper. When you're
I'm
serious,
using
it gets
inside
deeper.
Serious voice.
Did you notice that, Steve? His voice is definitely deeper.
And I'll tell you something else, Wendy.
And he's speaking with
Here's
authority.
Something else.
In a Richard Nixon accent, kind of.
Right.
Hey, I'm for that, but there's nothing I can do. I'm not scared. I'm going to cast my vote, and I'm going to just see what happens because that's all I can do.
That is all you can do.
Conservative Bill Kristol tweeted over the weekend that he's found his independent conservative to run for president. So
who is it?
Well, I don't know. I thought I was going to ask if it was one of you, the two of you. No,
no,
neither
it's not
of you?
Us.
God, who would want that job? I still don't get it. I still don't think Trump wants that job. I think he got in it just to say it. And now it's like, you know, no looking back. I want to win because, as we've mentioned, it's turned into a popularity contest, which I guess it always has been.
That's
but
all
now
it
more
is.
Than ever.
Right.
Why do you think I wanted to be class president in high school?
Popularity contest?
Yeah. Do you think I did anything to help the school or our class? No. And the odds, Vegas odds, were for me losing.
Vegas, I know. I saw those odds, too. I was 12. I'm like, oh, I wish I could gamble. I wish so badly I could gamble. Did you see Trump's quote? This was from last. I can't remember if this was Thursday or Friday,
where said, "I'll debate Bernie Sanders."
Well, that's a side story. That's a fantastic side story, isn't it? He wants, Trump wants Sanders in the race because it cuts the Democratic vote. If Bernie Sanders enters the race as a third party candidate, the Democrats, who have been, fluctuating back and forth between Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, all of a sudden that vote's cut. So he is like crazy endorsing Bernie Sanders to run as a third party candidate. Here's a quick quote from Donald Trump that I loved. We didn't have time to talk about this on Friday. There was a lot of pageantry here at the station. But Donald Trump said these words, and I love this. You have to be wealthy in order to be great.
No, you don't.
I don't think so.
I know a lot of wealthy people that aren't great at all. They're not even good.
He said it, and then he's not one to apologize, but he said words to the effect of, "I'm sorry, folks, but it's true. You have to be wealthy to be great." And the more I think about it, that's the exact opposite of true.
That's
you don't have to be wealthy to be great.
No, you sure don't. Somebody says that it's the opposite of what you said too. Jim, Bill got something backwards with the Vegas odds. I don't know. I trust him in the gambling department.
What did I say wrong, Jim?
I think you said that that Trump is 1-2.
And Hillary Clinton's
2-1.
Oh, it's the opposite.
2, you're more the favorite.
It's the opposite. I apologize. Yeah. You're right.
Okay. Right. I thought I was confused.
No,
one of us was.
I'm sorry. You're right.
I don't even get odds, so I didn't. I just hear, who's the favorite.
Hillary Clinton, you put down $2, she wins, you get $1 back. Donald Trump, the other way around, you put down $1, he loses, you get $2 back. Right?
So that would be a good bet, but you may not win it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's still not right.
She's the favorite.
She's not the favorite. If you're 2-1, you're more of a long shot than a 1-2.
No, but she's the favorite. They're saying for every $2 you put down on Hillary Clinton to win, you would get $1 back. Think if it was like a sports analogy. Think about the Cubs were in the World Series against the, you pick any American League team. You'd have to put down twice as much to win half your money back because they're the favorite. You follow me?
I think your logic's wrong. If a horse goes off at 4-5, he's more of a favorite than say if a horse went off at 1-1, right?
At 4-5, so you'd be putting down 80 cents to win a dollar.
The bigger number is the second of the two numbers,
that means you're
a favorite.
Right, but she is.
So
the
she is 1-2.
She is the
He's
favorite.
2-1. I don't understand why I don't gamble.
If she's 1-2, then yes, she's the favorite. But you said she was 2-1 and Trump.
Yeah, I reversed that part. I did reverse that part.
All right. Okay.
All right. Let's
so
bet.
Much confusion.
Jim, let's go to Las Vegas and put all of our money down on this.
Why don't we? That sounds like a great
idea. We're in.
Just so long as he doesn't win.
No, right. Thank you, Jim.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
I don't understand odds, and I don't understand, when you bet on football and they give you points. That confuses me, too. I just want, when I place a bet, which I never do, to win or to lose.
That's all I want to do. You can bet straight up, too, and actually get better odds than with the numbers.
But you're not going to make
points.
As much, right?
Right, right. That's.
I like to play it safe.
That's what gambling is.
That's
gambling
why I don't really
playing
gamble.
It safe. All right, let's take a quick break. We've got a big show for you. Tom Skilling later on, 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in for any reason. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Several times on the show we've talked about the fact that some of us here in the city, very few of us, are fans of both the Cubs and the White Sox. Right now, if you're a Cubs fan, the world is your oyster. Everything is going your way.
And if you're a Sox fan, things are sucking.
I've never seen a game like Saturday's game where the White Sox had a 7-1 lead with one out in the ninth.
It's happened a couple times.
Not it's happened several times this weekend. They blew leads to the Royals in all three games late in the game. But with one out in the ninth and a 7-1 lead and nobody on the bases, you say to yourself, this game is as done can be. And then they lost. And I like Robin Ventura a lot, but I don't know how the manager of a Major League Baseball team can't see when your closer has nothing. David Robertson came in. He had nothing. He was aiming the ball. He was just like throwing the ball like that.
That sound
like
effect
that.
Comes up again.
He's throwing the ball like that. And Robin comes out and talks to him and makes the decision, even after giving up several walks and hits. Yeah, this is my guy. That was not
Don't
the right
move.
Don't
you take him out?
Every time. Every time.
You took
time.
Me out when we did a celebrity softball tournament.
Yep.
You took me out.
I did.
I wasn't really there to win the game. We were there to be in a celebrity
Right.
tournament.
And the good thing is, 21 years later, you're not holding a grudge, which
well,
I appreciate.
I'm like, who died and made you captain? Robin Ventura?
You gave up 7 runs in a third
so
of an
what?
Inning.
It's for, it
you,
was just
you
for
pull
fun.
The pitcher. Robin Ventura has to understand.
It's not a
if
real
a guy's
game.
Not throwing, the White Sox game is
no,
a real
ours
game.
No, ours wasn't. No, the White
Stop
Sox you do.
Seriously, though, if you see a guy can't pitch on any given day, take him out of the game.
Isn't that just baseball 101?
Yeah, you would think.
You watching any of the Stanley Cup?
No. No. And it's so weird. It was on last night, and I knew it was on, and it's on the network. It's on Channel 5. It's on NBC. And I'm like, it's right there. I don't want to see this.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either, but I know who won, and they're ahead. Penguins up one.
One game to nothing, yeah.
I'll go Penguins.
When the Blackhawks aren't in it, I'm glad it exists. They shouldn't shut down the NHL, but I don't want. It's too painful, isn't it, to turn it on after the Blackhawks have been eliminated? I don't want to see it.
I want to know if the Blackhawks are watching it.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because you know what? They were tired. You can't win back-to-back Stanley Cups, and they needed some time off. It was a long season. So are they completely checked out, or are they watching the game?
Right.
Going, that could have been us.
Well, it's weird because I think when it's your profession, you probably feel the need to see it to know, you know, what your competition is like and to sit and go, yeah, I guess those are the two teams that belong there. But if I was on the Blackhawks, I don't think I'd watch it. I would go, I played my hockey for the year. I'll wait till next year. I'll get back into it.
I wonder.
It'd be very hard to.
Quick phone call from Jason. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Wendy and Bill. How are you?
Good. What's up, Jason?
You guys have a good Memorial weekend?
Yep, did
Very
you?
Very good.
Yes, we did. We had our barbecue Sunday. So that
just one?
On Monday.
I think a lot of people did that.
We just had it at our house, so that was more than enough.
Yeah.
And we didn't have people over. We just selfishly we cooked every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what? I had my brother-in-law bring over ribs last night, so that was pretty cool.
That counts.
Yeah,
you get right, points that for that.
Counts.
So what's up?
So, yeah, I'm listening to you guys talk about the debacle, and I'm from the, you know, I live on the south side. I live in Oak Forest, right across the street from St. Damien's, Bill.
Oh.
And, yeah,
that's
how about that?
Just blocks from where I grew up.
Just blocks from where you grew up. And my wife's family is all White Sox fans, so I'm listening to you talk about the debacle, and it just brings back to my mind me being a Cub fan, and I'm not a Sox hater. A game probably about 10 years ago or more, where it was a Friday afternoon, I'll never forget, it was a Friday afternoon, I was in my car, and the Cubs had a 5-1 lead up in New York, and going into the ninth, and Dempster blew it, and they lost 6-5, so I know what that feels like.
Yeah, but that's one. We did it all weekend.
Every game.
And last week a little.
Every game.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on with that. You know, you guys jumped out to such a lead like the Cubs did, and I don't know what's going on.
It's a long season.
Yes, it's thank God you're going through it now. You know what I mean? In May and June, you know, you guys can bounce back from that. You're not that far out. You know, what are you, in third place now?
Yeah. They went from a 5.5 game lead just a week and a half ago.
Jason, you are just such a half-full kind of guy, and I appreciate that. We need more people like you.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
I love you guys' show. I listen to you guys every day.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, man.
Have a great week. All right, a break, some news. We have to talk about the gorilla situation.
Oh,
yeah. That's the craziest story of the weekend, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Really a strange story. All right, so we'll get a break in. Steve with the news. We'll talk about the gorillas. Tom Skilling later on. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, I found an invention that is disturbing, extremely disturbing.
What websites do you go to, by the way?
Oh, don't look at my history.
The puppy pails. And to give, you know, you were giving dogs attention, so now you're going to give cats attention?
Yeah, equal time for all pets. Now, yesterday, I was listening to this station, and I heard, you know, Steve Bertrand, who does the news for us?
No.
Steve Bertrand, you've met Steve.
Hi, nice to meet
Comes
you.
Comes in every
hey,
day,
Wanderoo.
Does the Wintrust business launch. He's the best in the business. Steve was on, and he admitted to something that I kind of knew, but I've never heard him say on the air before, and that he is not a pet lover.
Although
he
you have
tolerates
a dog.
Them.
Yeah,
right?
I have a dog, sure.
But you, by your own admission, you said yesterday that everybody in your family, you appreciate the dog the least, right?
Well, it was Memorial Day. I didn't think anyone was listening.
Oh, yeah. Oh. People listen. Oh,
yeah. No, yeah, I'm not a huge, like, I never understand how people, you know, when a human and a dog is killed in a crash, how people relate more to the dog than mm-hmm. the human. That doesn't compute with me. So, yeah, I wish my pet well. We've educated her. We've done what we can.
Right.
You know,
you wouldn't be upset if your dog got hit by a car?
I'd be very upset.
Well, you're just saying that now. No, people are listening.
No, because that's if Bill was listening yesterday. She was ill again last week. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not going to be able to deal with this. So, if when Roxy goes, I won't be looking for another pet. I'm not a pet guy. I'm sorry.
How'd you get railroaded into having a pet then?
My kids both wanted one. My wife wanted one. I mean,
you're much more giving than I am.
I don't know. You have a rabbit, don't you?
We have a rabbit, but that took 15 years to work that deal as the kids, you know, tried everything in the world to get me to give in to get him a pet.
Tell them about the zoning laws. That's my favorite.
Well, I had to lie to them and explain that because of the way of our street is zoned, we weren't allowed to have a pet, that the city wouldn't allow us to have one.
How many years did you ride that one?
7.
Good for you.
7 years of that, and then they got an attorney, and there was a court injunction.
Briskman or Briskman?
It was Briskman, from Briskman and Briskman. And I had to finally give in and let them have a rabbit. But over the years, I mean, it was gut-wrenching because they really wanted pets. And I can't live in a house. When I was a kid, my parents just kept trying over and over. They would get every kind of animal going, maybe this is the one he'll like. And I didn't like them. And I kept saying, please stop trying because you won't find an animal that I like. Please stop
trying. Did
you have
stuffed animals?
Yeah, but those are so much easier to.
No, I know, but I mean, because I cared for my stuffed animals like they were real, and I couldn't wait to have a real animal.
Yeah, when I was little, I had a bunch, but they didn't go to the bathroom all over the house. They didn't bite me.
Well, you know, what I reject are the pet lovers who look at people who aren't pet lovers as less than
right
human.
When you
know?
Said that yesterday, because I was listening yesterday when you said I'm not a pet person, and I know from experience. People just don't want to hear that. They get so mad
they
if you
angry.
Admit that.
Right.
And I've defended you on numerous occasions because they're like, Bill hates animals. I'm like, he does not hate animals. He just doesn't want them in his house.
I couldn't
get
live
it.
With a, yeah.
And that's fine.
Right.
Some people don't. I mean, I get it.
Right.
Although I will say Jim didn't want to get a dog either. And then when we adopted this dog, I said, at least just come look at him. And he comes home that night and he goes, all right, I guess you guys can get the dog. And now, like, I can't separate them.
Right. That would not happen with me. Steve, would that happen with you?
You know, no, I mean, I love my pet.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Do you cuddle with your pet?
Well, when she was hurting last week, I had her in my lap for a while.
You did?
No one else was home, yeah. But, you
Do
know.
Do you call her Mrs. Oogie Googie?
Don't talk like that to me.
Do you baby talk to your dog?
I do not.
See, okay. That's one of the things that gets me about pets is that seemingly intelligent people all of a sudden become pudding. They just start talking
well,
like
it's
that.
It's pets and babies. They need our help to live.
Yeah.
We need to care for them.
Right.
So you talk to babies like that, and you talk to dogs and cats and pets like that. Hello, Mr. Oogie Googie.
That's so frightening. That's so scary. We never talk to our babies like that. Even
You're
my
cold,
neighbor,
man.
We have a neighbor, Mrs. Oogie Googie. I don't even talk to her like that.
Mrs. Oogie Googie. Right. You don't talk to your kids that way.
No.
I mean, that's what they tell you. Don't
right.
talk to your, don't baby talk to your kids.
I did when they couldn't talk.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to.
Oh, my God. You didn't chew on their feet and go, you are so
Oh,
cute.
No. That's cannibalistic.
You speak to them as you speak to others in complete sentences. And
not
that's
a newborn.
Absolutely.
Right.
That's how they learn to communicate.
You know, hey, honey, what's on the Wintrust business lunch this afternoon will astound you. Is that what you say to a newborn?
Yes, because that's how they learn the language.
You will get to know Terry Savage very well, honey.
Uh-oh. I just got a text. Please don't talk to us like that. Mrs. Uji Guji just sent me a text.
Uji Guji.
Uji Guji.
Common spelling.
Tell me how to spell it, will you?
It's OOOOOJI-GOOOOOJI. How did she get my text number? Listen to this, though. If you're a cat owner, if you're a cat lover, or if you don't like cats, listen to this. It says, if you've ever watched a cat lick itself or another cat and thought to yourself, I wish I could lick that cat, too.
I have never had that thought ever in my life.
Nobody has.
They have sandpaper tongues. Have you ever felt a cat's tongue?
Mm-mm.
This isn't a trick question. They have, like, it's like their taste buds are like sandpaper because they clean themselves that way and they kind of comb their hair.
A cat would let you feel its tongue without biting you? Would a cat allow that?
I didn't use a little tongue depressor and say ah. I just, Declan, every once in a while would lick my finger and I'm like, ooh, that's rough.
Ooh. Well, here's a project you might want to jump in on. It's the Licky, L-I-C-K-I. There's a Kickstarter project for the Licky. The Licky, it says, is a silicone brush shaped like a giant tongue that will allow you to bond with your cat by licking said cat. Cats groom each other as a form of social bonding, the Kickstarter page from Jason O'Meara says. There's also evidence to suggest that cats view and treat their human captors as large cats.
That is not true. Cats do whatever they want. They look at you and go, you are stupid, feed me.
And I'm going to kill you eventually. Cats think that all the time, all day, every day.
That isn't true.
But cats don't look at humans as though they're also cats, do they?
Well, no, and they're more solitary. Like a dog is a pack animal, so I think they do kind of, they know you're a human.
Right.
But they want to be in a group, a pack. Cats are very solitary.
Yep. As a human, this again, according to Jason O'Meara from PDX Pet Design, he's the person behind the Licky.
He's the crazy one?
Yeah. As a human, you are left out of intimate licking rituals. At best...
Get a girlfriend.
At best, you have a one-sided licking relationship with your cat. Those are words I thought I'd never say. In theory, the Licky would help the affection run both ways. No actual cat licking is necessary. I'm going to circle the word necessary on this page. On the other hand, it looks pretty weird. Cat licking was once featured on the episode of TLC's My Strange Addiction. People are addicted to licking cats, really? Are they?
This is just all weird.
With this brush, human cat lickers would presumably reduce the risk of getting hairballs. Well, there's the plus. I knew there had to be a plus here somewhere. I didn't know what it would be.
If you've ever seen, I've had one cat and that's it. And if you see a cat that horks up a hairball, they convulse. It's really the most disturbing thing.
When I was growing up, the people who lived across the street and down two houses had a cat. And whenever you would go to their house, their cat did that all the time. And they'd go, oh, we're so sorry. Lucifer never does that. And I go, no, Lucifer always does that. I've never been to your house once where Lucifer hasn't done that. You could hear that, like, on a quiet night. You could hear I'm three houses away. You'd hear that, like,
that
down the block.
It. It's like the zombies in Walking Dead. All right, well, can we post that video? Because it's like a hand brush, which I can understand. Probably feels good on the cat's skin. But this, you put in your mouth like a giant pacifier, and it's a tongue that hangs down, and you lick your cat. What has gone on with this country?
I don't know. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll check in with Ashley Escada from CNET. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, fun
games. I don't even know if people could hear that. Steve, you could hear that, right?
I honestly didn't hear
you. You didn't hear reverb?
I wasn't listening too closely, but...
We heard heavy reverb.
I think we heard it.
All right.
And you know what? It's a Tech Tuesday, thank God, because that was some tech that you don't want to use again, especially during a commercial.
No.
You joined Black Sabbath.
I did.
You killed me. All right. It is a Tech Tuesday. Ashley Escada is on the line with us from CNET.com, and she is host of Tomorrow Daily. Hey, Ashley.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Welcome back, Ashley. We're thrilled to be talking to you.
Oh, we're having technical difficulties.
Ashley,
I'm still here.
Oh, there you are.
You're
there.
Okay.
All right, what do you want to start with today?
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's a few things. The one that I thought was the most interesting, you know, a lot of people maybe go to their sports book, put some money down on the horse races that have been happening lately. Well, one group in particular is working on collective AI to predict the winners, and they came up pretty big recently, and they're going to be releasing their AI to everybody to try
out. What's AI? Artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Silicon Valley startup called Unanimous AI. They use a form. It's actually human-based artificial intelligence. So it's almost crowdsourced. So they'll ask a group of people, for example, who will win the Kentucky Derby, which horse? And 20 people guessed. Nobody. They had to pick four horses. Nobody got more than two horses right, but because of the collective information, it came up with the superfecta. So the guy who sort of runs the company put $20 down and won, I believe, $10,000.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
That's not bad. Now, Ashley, there's a similar story I heard over the weekend having to do with computer algorithms, and here's what they've done. I want to say it's the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was the Dodgers. They figured out a program by which they map out the outfield on a computer, and then they plug in the data of the batters and the pitchers, and they can position their outfielders based on what the data shows them from this computer algorithm. Like if you're pitching to a certain batter, he tends to hit more to the left side and deep. They can position their outfielders based on this computer, and other baseball teams are going, that's not fair.
Isn't that cheating?
Kind of, yeah.
It's so interesting because it's, you know, where is that line? And I think that we're going to start running into that question more and more often. I mean, you could do the same thing with football teams. You could say, okay, well, this running back tends to go to the left more than the right. But I mean, it's not necessarily anything that you couldn't see if you were studying films closely and taking detailed notes.
Right.
It's just that it's much easier to map out because of computer technology and, you know, being able to track people a little bit easier on the field, or, you know, a lot of these things are sort of information that used to take a really long time to compile, but now is almost instantaneous. So is it cheating? I'm not sure. I would personally say no, just because, you know, that player could change their stance up, or that player could, you know, adjust their play style, or, you know, there's a lot of different things that could happen there. It's not a guarantee that they would hit into, you know, left field, but yeah, it's a really interesting kind of section of artificial intelligence that I think we're going to have to start looking a little bit more closely at as we kind of move forward with it.
If you're a racetrack, though, you don't want this technology, because you just mentioned one guy who throws down $20 and wins $10,000. What if everybody had access to that? They'd go out of business in a day.
Right. So, interestingly enough, I mean, again, like, the crowd can sort of guess what those four, let's say the four horses that would come in would be, but it could be wrong too. Yeah. So just like Nate Silver at 538 with election in politics, like he was like, we were wrong, and we, you know, we ran the numbers and we thought this was going to be the outcome, and it clearly wasn't. And we were surprised by that information. So I think it's still a burgeoning technology. Artificial intelligence is still sort of in its infancy. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on, especially for anybody. I believe now they're going to be opening up this UNU, the Universal, or I'm sorry, Unanimous AI. They're going to be opening up their platform so that people can try it. And basically it'll give you sort of a question that'll say, who's going to win the Stanley Cup? And then you can drag your magnet over to a certain answer. You have a minute, and then over time it will collectively kind of gather people's answers and see what the collective thinks.
All right, so artificial intelligence happening. Is there some artificial household assistance I can get? Tell us about Zenbo.
Oh, Zenbo, he's so cute. This is from Asus. They announced a robot assistant at Computex, which is a conference that's happening. And they announced, so Zenbo is a little family-friendly household assistant robot. They announced a bunch of features for it. So apparently it can move around the house. It can follow you around your home. It can recognize faces. It can play games with
kids. Can it do housework? Can it get me a beer when necessary? Can it cook?
Not quite Rosie the Robot. We're not quite there.
Darn it.
I'm right there with you, Wendy. I'm dying for a Rosie the Robot that can, you know, wash all my do all my laundry and make me dinner at night. But it can assist with recipes. It can take pictures. It can place phone calls. It's got some, camera functionality there. So they did a live demo. It answered some questions. It took some pictures of the crowd, things like that. And surprisingly, we've seen some robots that have been assistant robots, like Pepper. It's a really famous example of a robot that's out there right now, but costs thousands of dollars to buy. I believe they start between $6,000 and $9,000. Well, this robot will only cost $600.
Oh, that's not bad.
No official release date yet. But it made quite a splash, and it is a really cute little robot that kind of reminds me of maybe a cross between maybe a Johnny Five and a Wally and a BB-8. It's a very strange little robot, but it is very cute.
It can play music in movies. It can provide reminders to take medication and head to appointments. And it would be perfect for you. You could watch movies on it, Bill.
I would like that.
And then it would say, go to work now, please. Yeah.
Do most people, Ashley, when robots become commonplace in our home, do most people want them to look like a Wall-E-style robot? Or do we want them to look more like a human, do you think?
I think that there is still that sort of fear of robots looking too much like humans. I think the psychology of it's really interesting. A lot of people are more willing to accept a robot if it looks more, if it's cute.
Yeah.
And so we see a lot of really cute assistant robots that are happening right now.
I think we could use Westworld as a template. Nothing wrong happened there. Everything went fine in Westworld, remember?
Yeah, exactly. Or like, Terminator.
Yeah.
Totally
we have nothing
fine.
To worry about. Sure.
Well, I mean, you want to know it's a robot. You don't want to be confused because Bill's working on the Olivia Wilde bot.
Yep.
And it looks too lifelike.
Too
and
lifelike.
Then you're going to think it's really her.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You're going to get one of those. You're going to get a copyright takedown notice. She's
going to
say,
not.
Hey, you can't use my likeness as a robot face.
What else can we find on Tomorrow Daily if we go to CNET.com today or tomorrow?
Oh, my gosh. Well, if you head over to tomorrowdaily.com, it'll send you to our CNET page. And we just recently interviewed quite a few people. We've been interviewing people every Thursday. We just interviewed the Mowglis, indie band The Mowglis, who are about to go on tour. We also interviewed the creator of Honest Trailers. I'm sure everybody, sort of the internet phenomenon of Honest Trailers. He got to talk a little bit about the process of it. And we're just having a lot of fun. So if you want to come listen about future technology and how that's sort of coming to life in our everyday activities, you can head over and watch them Tomorrow Daily.
Thank you so much. She's Ashley Esqueda on a Tech Tuesday. Go to CNET.com or us tomorrowdaily.com. Thank you so
much. Thanks, Ashley.
Thanks.
All right, a quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Caliente.
Muy caliente.
It's going to be a hot summer, and we got to find out all about it, hot and dry. And that's not what we say about Tom Skilling. You're not hot and dry.
You're hot, Tom, but not dry.
Oh, well, thank you, guys. I appreciate that. I don't know about the dry part of it, although we are that way in parts of the area right now. It'll be interesting to see how the precip works out. It's always the most difficult call in a seasonal forecast. But you're right about the prospects for a warm summer. That could very well be the way we're heading.
Can I ask, Tom, every once in a while you'll see like the Farmer's Almanac, and they'll predict the weather kind of a year out. Is that even realistic? Can you predict the weather a year away?
You know what? We have models we're running now that marry the atmosphere with the ocean. They're called coupled models for that reason. And these things give us a read on general trends out to a year ahead. We can't get down to specifics of individual storm systems or anything like that. But what they do is they run this model over and over again with updated data, and then they average. They do an ensemble forecast where they average a collection of forecasts. And, there's been some skill in the trends that are indicated. For instance, these models had indicated an above normal spring, and we'll finish the spring of 2016, meteorological spring, tonight at midnight, and this spring has wound up being about 1.7 degrees above normal and 2 degrees warmer than last spring, interestingly enough. And that may surprise a lot of folks, but The fact is, except for a cool April, and we had some cool weeks in May, a little over half the days have been above normal this spring, and we've finished on quite a note here with this Memorial Day weekend and the warm spell that we're still involved in right now.
What a beautiful weekend weather-wise, and today is just gorgeous.
Isn't it the truth? Wendy, if we had been able to program it, could we have done any better?
No.
You know, this has been amazing. We've had 8 consecutive days. Today will make the 9th in the city of 80-degree or warmer temperatures, and we'll have a little lake breeze that'll cool the shoreline areas. But when you stand back and look at the whole area, the area that's being cooled by the lake is very localized this time of the year. It only reaches a couple miles inland. Late in the day, sometimes you get a lake breeze that goes a little farther inland, but we by that time, have established warmth over most of the area. So it was a beautiful Memorial Day weekend, no question.
And no humidity. That's, you know, when it's hot out, you're saying 9 days in a row of 80 degrees and above. It didn't feel like 80 because you weren't, like, just drenched in sweat because of the humidity.
You're right. You know, we measure dew point. That's our favorite atmospheric moisture measurement index. And when it gets above 70, it feels like you're down on the Gulf Coast or in the tropics. We had dew points in the 50s yesterday, upper 50s. So that's moderately humid, and some areas had mid-60s. You know, as you get out in the crop-producing areas, the crop isn't far enough along yet to be transpiring a lot of moisture into the air. That'll happen as we get farther on. It's amazing the amount of moisture corn and soybeans, you know, just the plants that cover many states, put in the atmosphere. We often have the most humid air anywhere in the United States, even more humid than along the Gulf Coast in the height of the growing season, because we have plants transpiring or adding moisture to the air. But we're not there yet. And you're right, Wendy, it was very comfortable. It really was.
Tom, I've been watching you for years and years. Wendy's been watching you for years and years. We know that you don't get very political, but I have to ask you, what do you say to people who deny the climate change? All the evidence is there, so how can you get that point across to people who don't believe that there's climate change?
Well, first of all, Bill, it's not a political issue. It's been made bad in some quarters, but it isn't. And obviously our politicians will have to be get involved in policy, and I think that's what scares a lot of folks. But the fact is, scientifically, the consensus is about as widespread as you could have on any scientific issue. Every major scientific organization in the world confirms the fact that we are warming, and we see evidence of it all the time. In the last week, we've set the highest temperature ever recorded in India. They had thousands that died in heat last year. Sea level is rising. It's up 6 to 8 inches. We've lost 9.9 trillion tons of Arctic ice, and this is ongoing in Greenland, Alaska, northern Scandinavia, and Antarctica. The deniers will say, oh, sea ice has been at record levels. That's sea ice, not the land-based ice. And that's actually a product of the warming that's going on, because what's happening is the land-based ice in Antarctica that holds most of the water, and that's true in Greenland and Alaska as well, it's melting. Melting as fast as it is almost anywhere, and it's put fresh water, which is low density and sits on the top of the high-density ocean water, that stays warm. And so the warm water is kind of pushed below the surface and is melting the glaciers in Greenland and also in Antarctica from below. And the top layer, because it's less salty, freezes in the cold season, and there appears to be an increase in sea ice. But the fact is that's seasonal, and it adds very little to sea level change. The land-based ice, on the other hand, is melting. And in just the last year, NASA scientists have found that the ice sheet in western Antarctica is decoupled now from the land on which it sits, which means there's nothing securing it there, and it will collapse in its entirety over the next 100 or 200 years, if not sooner. It all seems to be happening faster than any of the models or anybody had predicted. So there's a lot of effort being paid right now on looking at that, and what goes on in the Arctic affects what goes on here, and people don't realize that. But it's happening. We've burned a record acreage up in Canada. We burned 10 million acres in wildfires this year. We've had flooding in Texas. This is an earmark of climate change. even these record snows in the winter in the Northeast are examples of climate change.
It drives me nuts when people, you know, when it snows and they're like, oh, go shovel the global warming. That's not what it means. There's still seasons and snow.
Cindy, these folks need a good course on the difference between climate and weather. We have a senator who throws snowballs on the Senate floor every time it snows in Washington. Apparently, he's convinced by the fact it snows. And by the way, nobody in the scientific community said it can't snow in a globally warmed environment. It does in places. It just snows less frequently and in less geography, less terrain. But the fact is, you know, the snow cut, all the thick ice, the multi-year ice up in the northern Arctic has melted. We have stuff now that is more seasonal, and it freezes up in winter and melts more quickly in summer. And we've melted snowpack up in the Arctic, which is why the. Do you know the North Pole was 19 degrees above normal this winter? I mean, that's amazing. If we were 19 degrees above normal in Chicago,
Yeah. Think
the world had gone crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's the 1-2 punch here, Tom, is that it's catastrophic that all these changes are taking place, but it's also so baffling that it's become such a political issue, and so many people are looking at the data and just going, despite that, I'm going to go with this instead.
Yeah. Maybe it has to do with the fact that, you know, Al Gore, God love him, was one of the spokespeople, and so this made it look political.
Yeah.
The fact is, this is happening, and we as operational forecasters see evidence of it in these weird jet stream patterns we get. And I was speaking out at Benedictine University just a couple weeks ago with James Hansen, who's the NASA scientist, or was for a long time. He's now with Columbia University, who talks of climate change. And he says what's happening is, he said, the freshwater off Greenland is cooling the North Atlantic even as the planet warms. And he thinks the temperature variations that this will give rise to will lead to a breed of storm, the likes of which we've not seen before, because we're increasing this thermal variation between the part of the atmosphere that's warming because we're adding CO2. And by the way, our CO2 levels in this atmosphere are like nothing we've seen for 25 million years.
Jeez.
And the last time it happened, sea level was almost 30 feet higher than it is today, which means the atmosphere is not yet totally compensated for all the CO2 that's been thrown into it. A lot of the heat is going into the oceans, and this is leading to the coral dying. Look at the sea lions and that come ashore out in the west. This is happening because their food supply is changing, and they're being poisoned in some cases by bacteria that are proliferating in the warmer ocean waters out there. Also, our oceans are turning more acidic as they absorb this incredible amount of CO2 that we put into the atmosphere, and this will eventually kill phytoplankton that is the first, part of the food chain. So, you know, there's just all kinds of things going on right now that are linked to it.
That's the end of the world, isn't it, Tom?
If we do some good stuff, Wendy, you know, and if we're kind of smart about it, and, there are ways we can. There's a lot of stuff in the pipeline that has yet to be realized, and it's not going away. But it's not the end of the world yet, anyway. So
all right.
We've got some time to do some things about this.
Now, last summer, I think we were ripped off. It was we had joined a village pool, and we went, I think, once or twice. We didn't join this year, and now I think we're going to regret it. We're going to have a nice, warm summer, but not necessarily dry.
I think that's true. Although I've been talking to my friend John Hazard, who farms down in Wilmington, down in Will County. He was saying down there they actually could use some water, and that's confirmed by the rainfall analyses. Much of the Midwest from Illinois eastward is running drier than average. We in northeast Illinois here, the Chicago area, are running above average on rainfall so far, and Iowa has been wet, and the plains have been drenched, as has the area all the way down to Texas. Now, those areas, because of wet soil, may have a cooler than average summer. But all the models we look at and the indications we're seeing, my friends at the Weather Service have done an interesting analysis of what kind of summers we've had when we go from a strong El Nino to a strong La Nina, which we seem to be in the process of doing right now. And they found that they tend to be hot. So one would think that we have a warm summer coming. And if that's true, I get that that swimming pool
I think it's too late now.
Membership renewed, to tell you the truth, Wendy.
I'm just going to do a slip and slide in the backyard.
Do a
this
slip
year.
And slide. I have a Mr. Turtle pool. And, Tom, that's you can't beat that for fun. It's impossible.
Hey, can I stop over?
Yeah, whenever you want.
All slip and
open
slide
invite.
Together, you know?
Open invite. Tom, by the way, on a personal note, you look fantastic, and I saw the Channel 9 report about you eating healthy and working out and losing weight, and it's working for you. You're doing great.
Well, thank you, Bill. I'll tell you, yeah, I was kind of not real pleased where I was going, so I called in some help because I'm so stupid. I go into these gyms. I don't know how to work all this equipment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what the settings are that are right. So I'm working with a trainer that, interestingly, my roommate found, and he had been working with him. So we're doing that. We're getting some really good dietary advice from a gal who, Pat Butkus, who does wonderful work with vegetables and all the rest. So I'm trying, Bill. I'm hanging in there. You know,
you're doing great.
How I do, but so far so good. And thank you. I appreciate it.
Can you say, are you okay to say how many pounds you're down, or is that not a fair question? Would you rather wait?
No, that's perfectly all right. I mean, you know,
how many pounds down?
You put the ugly body on TV, people can see.
Stop it.
No, come on.
Knows what's going on, but I'm down 24 pounds.
How about that?
For
that's
you.
Fantastic.
That's in about 7 weeks. So, it, you know, it's going off in a nice clip, and I do these torture sessions that they call exercise routines, you know. I always say to my trainer, where in the heck was this device developed? In what torture chamber did this come from?
Well, since you're eating healthy, and I know this is not really, maybe it's a weather-related question, what's going on with the lettuce out there? All the lettuce you go to purchase now is brown and gross and really expensive. What's,
really?
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting, Wendy. Now, I've been doing all right. Maybe it's where I'm shopping. I don't know.
Wendy goes to it's a used vegetable store,
no,
which you
I
shouldn't
don't.
Go to.
It's just sometimes, you know, you have, like last year was bad for farmers. I was wondering where your lettuce comes from and why it's not looking good. It's not crisp. It's brown.
Hmm.
Oh, Wendy, maybe, you know, this frozen stuff from last year doesn't work very well. You know, when you freeze it, it kind of looks
nope.
mushy, or unfreeze it.
Nope.
So maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. No, that's an interesting observation. The farmers' markets will be opening imminently, and now I'm going to keep my eye on that. I hadn't heard that.
Well,
so that's very interesting.
I will look at farmers' markets because maybe it's better. I don't know,
that
but the one that's
route.
Coming from overseas or wherever it's coming is just—it's not good.
Huh.
All right.
Wow,
well, we look forward.
Well, let's hope that doesn't continue, huh?
Oh, I know. You got to eat healthy. You need the lettuce.
You need the lettuce, Tom. Absolutely. You look great.
You know,
24 pounds.
Really great are tomatoes when they start coming in. You know, the fresh grown ones.
I just planted mine yesterday, so I'm going to have to water them if it's going to be a hot summer. I got to stay on top of that.
Good idea.
Tom,
that's always a good idea. You know, usually we reach a point in July almost every year, and unfortunately that's pollination season for a lot of our crops and all, but it's at that point the sun is so intense that the rate of evaporation exceeds normal rainfall. So if you have abnormally low rainfall, there's a period there where we always are a little touch and go, no matter how wet it's been, for rain, for moisture. So that's the period we're going to have to watch. And this dry trend down south worries me a little bit in our southern suburbs. Because, you know, if you don't get your widespread rains at this time of the year, we call them synoptic scale rains in the weather office, these broad coverage rainfalls, you have more trouble in the summer when the rains tend to come in more scattered fashion. So it'll be interesting to see whether we can break out of this dry pattern. That's not a good sign going into the growing season.
It is not. Tom, thank you. Always fun to talk weather and lettuce with you. It's Tom Skilling, the best in the business. Thank you, Tom.
Well, guys, thank you. And I learned something. I didn't. I'm going to keep my eye on lettuce now.
Yeah.
So Bill and Wendy, good to talk to you guys. And thanks for having me on.
Anytime.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Tom.
Love
Tom
you
Skilling,
so much.
The great Tom Skilling, everybody. World
He's
renowned.
Awesome.
World renowned. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll take another quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN, as Kim just mentioned. And the whole world is outraged over the killing of a gorilla named Harambe. There's a Facebook page, Justice for Harambe. This happened at the Cincinnati Zoo. I think everyone right now has seen this video.
Yeah, it's been all over the place all weekend, and it's incredibly disturbing on several counts.
Animal activists have created online petitions and Facebook pages after a special zoo response team shot and killed the 17-year-old lowland gorilla. As I mentioned, his name was Harambe. It's a terrible, tragic situation. The lowland gorilla is an endangered species, but you can't... It's a wild animal. This kid gets into the enclosure. Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard various reports that the kid had said something to his mom. This 4-year-old boy said, "I want to go swimming in that pool in there," or something like that. And his mom said, "This is what I heard someone say they overheard." And the mom's like, no, you can't do that. Well, somehow this kid snuck away and got through the barriers and got into the enclosure. Yeah. And everyone's saying that the mom is responsible. Try as you may, even a mom who keeps an eagle eye on her son, that son shouldn't have been able to get into the enclosure, bottom line.
Correct. He's 4 years old?
4 years old.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what the setup is like there, but you would think that any zoo would do everything in their power to make it impossible to get over any kind of a fence or barrier, you would think.
So the kid's in there, and it's funny because you hear various reports like Harambe is being very sweet. He helped the boy up, and then he pulled up his pants. It's a gorilla. He's not going, "God, those are some cute pants, but they're falling down. Here, honey, let me pull them up." He's a wild animal. It did appear that he was very gentle with the boy.
Yeah.
Until you saw him grab the kid by the leg and swing him through this pool that the kid wanted to go in, allegedly.
Yeah.
It was violent and very scary. And you see the kid sitting up after he was slid through the little moat or whatever, the little water area. And the kid's just sitting there. And I start thinking, why didn't that kid try and run away? But he's probably in complete shock at this point.
He didn't look, I mean, this is just a guess.
He didn't look scared.
He didn't look scared. I would have looked petrified.
But don't you think he was in shock? I mean, come on. A 700-pound gorilla has just dragged you, you know.
Sure.
It was a slip and slide. He went underwater, and then, you know, he's sitting there. And then at one point, it looks like the girl is kind of protecting him. I know this happened at Brookfield Zoo, where a little girl fell into the enclosure, and Binti Jua was the lowland gorilla that actually picked the kid up and protected the kid.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't take a chance. There was some aggression shown by this gorilla, Harambe. I'm so sorry they had to shoot it. I'm sure the zoo's terribly upset
absolutely.
They had to shoot it.
But without a doubt.
4-year-old boy, wild gorilla, you got to save the kid.
I agree. You and I were talking about this, and this is the first thing that everybody wonders. Why wouldn't you just use some sort of a tranquilizer gun on the gorilla? But you can't because it's not instantaneous.
Yeah, there was some, I don't know if it was the zoo director, but they had said, you know, we had thought about that, but it takes a while to kick into effect.
Yeah.
And also, it hurts. You get like a tranquilizer dart.
So that would make the gorilla more aggressive.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So that's not going to work.
So I don't know what's going on. I know.
I'm trying to remember the storyline of exactly what took place where they tried to do something to get the gorilla's attention away, right? Weren't they trying to do something to distract the gorilla? I don't know where in the timeline that played out.
I don't know. The kid was in there 10 to 15 minutes alone.
That's a long time.
And it's heartbreaking that this gorilla was shot, but I mean, what do? You don't wait for it to...
If the gorilla had done something horrendous and maimed or killed the child, then everybody would be shouting, how could they have not done something to that gorilla? A kid is dead.
And I think also they said that they couldn't give the gorilla a tranquilizer because it would take too long for it to kick in and, you know, it would agitate him.
Right.
All right,
that's what we're saying.
My sister has called, I guess, to reprimand me.
All right.
Betsy is on the line. Now, you're a docent at Brookfield Zoo. We've all worked at Brookfield Zoo for a long time. I take it you want to chime in on this.
Well, yeah, a couple of things. First of all, Binti just saved a boy, not a girl. But that's
Wendy, God, let's really correct me on that. Whatever, it was a kid.
Unprofessional, Wendy.
This whole thing really is a tragedy because the gorilla was doing what a gorilla should do. An alien creature drops down into his home And he's trying to protect his group. And considering that, he was, from the video, extremely gentle with the boy.
Except when he dragged him through the little moat area. That didn't look very gentle to me.
Well, a couple things here. One is human babies are a lot more fragile than gorilla babies. And, you know, they can be a little rougher with their own babies than they can with humans. Also, tons of people are up there shouting at him, upsetting him.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he didn't know what to do. So, I mean, it was dangerous to the boys. So I am not saying they were wrong to do what they did. But, you know, had there not been a lot of people there, had the crowd gotten back, had a keeper that worked with the gorilla work with him, it's possible it would have ended differently. But you have to make a decision in a split second.
And that, honestly, is what really disturbs me. I hate the fact that this gorilla was shot and killed. And people want to blame the mom. The zoo should have it so it's not easily accessible.
And I believe they did, because, you know, I'm just getting the same information you are off the internet, but I've read that he went, like, over a barrier, through a wire, and the same thing when it happened at Brookfield, the kid went over a barrier, through a planter, and then fell in, you know? So, I mean, you cannot make an exhibit 100% safe unless you're going to really ruin the experience for people to see the animals. If you had, like, wall-to-ceiling, you know, glass, you could do that.
Sure.
But if you watch people at the zoo, especially little kids, they don't want to look through the glass. They want to look above the glass, you know.
And so, there are reports, too, that when everybody started screaming, which, why wouldn't you? Because if you're at the zoo that day, oh, my God, there's a kid. That's what kind of freaked the gorilla out, too.
Yes, I believe so. There was a really good article by a gorilla expert that was on the internet yesterday, and I read it. And his point was, if, you know, not the security at the zoo, not all those people were there, if his keepers that he knows and trusts, they might have been able to talk him down. But the interesting thing is that gorilla's first instinct wasn't to attack. If he wanted to kill that child, he could have done it in a split second.
And he probably would have done it right away. They said, I think the zoo director said the gorilla didn't appear to be attacking the child, but he said it's an extremely strong animal in an agitated situation. They said tranquilizing the gorilla wouldn't have knocked it out immediately, leaving the boy in more danger.
True, so, and sometimes you hit him with a dart, you know, the gorilla's being attacked, and he gets more upset and, you know, and takes it out on the kid. But I think mostly he was just trying, you know, the parts I saw, at first he was really gentle, and he was, you know, just, even when the kid screamed, he didn't react a lot. But then as it got on, he was, like, trying to drag the kid away, and it's not, in my opinion, you know, I've watched gorillas for 30-some years, but I'm not an expert. But to me, it did not look like, I'm going to kill this kid.
Right.
It was more like, I'm going to get out of here and take him with me, you know? And he just was rougher than you would be with a human.
Wendy, like a fan who catches a foul ball, you get to keep the foul ball. That's in the gorilla world, that's what happens.
I believe that is in the rule book.
That's it. The kid's in there. It belongs to the gorilla.
It just breaks my heart, though.
If he wanted to kill him, he could have. And what would you do, Bill? An alien being drops into the middle of your TV room while you're watching a movie.
With your daughters and wife, you'd protect them.
Do everything you can to protect the kid. Always. Always.
Say, do you have any action figures that I can have from you?
Right. Work out a trade. Some sort of a trade.
Well, it is really heartbreaking. I hate that this gorilla got killed. But
he did nothing wrong, and that is the tragedy of it. And, you know, zoos do as much as they can to keep people safe. But every time I work at the zoo, there's parents with their kids leaning way over the railing, and they get mad at you if you ask them to pull them back, you know?
I know. I have two kids. You have two nephews, and they're not always easy. And, you know, sometimes parents can't always be to blame either.
No. I think, you know, if she had other kids, it's easy enough to lose track of one for a minute.
Right.
You know, and no matter how zoos try to make things safe, if you've got a crazy person who wants to get in there, some naked guy who wants to become one with a tiger.
Me.
Or
I've done that a few times.
Yes, I think I remember that. Or we used to have a guy that wanted to get in with a rhino and put a Cubs hat on it, and everyone knows rhinos are Sox fans.
Yes, I just stepped on your joke. Sorry.
Yes, you did.
All right. Well, it is upsetting. And, you know, the bottom line is this gorilla is dead. And I feel bad about it.
Sure.
But you wouldn't want the kid to be dead. That's first and foremost.
And it If it was an adult, I would put all the blame on the adult. But if it's a kid, he's doesn't know better.
Do what kids do. We want to explore gorilla pens. That's what kids do.
There was some rumor, though, that the kid said, Mom, I want to go in that water. Now, I don't know where
but
I read
mom
that.
Went, like, if you were a kid.
One of the witnesses said he said it, and, you know, and the mom said, no, you can't. No, no, no. And he.
But that's a normal situation.
The mom would laugh it off. Like,
right.
Yeah, well, that doesn't work that way. It's a zoo. You
and
have
you
to look
think
at him. Right.
He's going to do it. And it was really disturbing to me also to hear the mom's audio going, Mommy loves you. Like,
oh, like yeah. It's the end.
Yeah.
That was heartbreaking, yes.
That's spooky.
Oh, that was really, the whole thing is terribly tragic. And, you know, my sister, Betsy, the animal lover, a docent at Brookfield Zoo, we're a Brookfield Zoo family. So thank you for weighing in on this.
Thanks, Betsy.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Wendy, my brother's on line 3 with a differing opinion. You want to put him through? I don't know.
I will put him through because the first thing she does is correct me.
She was very upset. The Binti Jewel story was 20 years ago, wasn't it? How
long
ago
was
that?
Yeah, and it was a girl or a boy. I don't even remember now.
I don't remember
either. See, details like that don't really matter. We're talking about Harambe.
Right.
Very sad.
Right. All right. A quick break. More of Wendy's relatives next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
All right. A very sad, tragic tale in Cincinnati. Harambe was shot and killed in the enclosure at the zoo as a 4-year-old boy got into the enclosure, a lowland gorilla. They were hoping to continue breeding him. I think he was 17 years old. He was a teenager, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to try and have him sire some more children so they can keep this endangered species going.
Right.
And as that kid, my sister had a good point. If this gorilla was going to kill the kid, it looked like he could have done it right away.
Within seconds. Sure. Sure.
But he was trying to figure it out. And as he's dragging the kid, you and I discussed something about the kid's reaction.
The child does not look even a little bit afraid to either you or me. We've seen the video several times. And the kid is just kind of sitting there as if to say, I'm new to the world of the zoo. I'm only 4. Maybe this is part of the zoo experience, is that you can get as close to the animals as you want. He doesn't seem even a little bit scared. I'm older than 4. I would be so afraid. But he's just kind of sitting there going, I'm here and the gorilla's here and no one else is even close by. I'm winning this one.
Well, he did scream.
At some point, he did scream. But other than the scream, there is a scream. But other than the scream, he's just sitting there, just looking at the gorilla.
And when the gorilla drags him through the water and he's just kind of sitting there, it looks like he's looking at the gorilla to go, okay, what's happening next? He
right.
could have been in shock, but I don't know. Half of, I guess he's 4. How does he know?
I don't think he knows the rules yet.
Wouldn't you know, like, you're sitting in a little moat with a gorilla looking at you. The gorilla just dragged you through.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you try to, like, run away or get away?
I'm not sure, because I would think...
We don't even know what to do with a bear. Half of the...
I know.
The literature tells you to run. Half of it says, stare it in the eye.
Right, and try your best to intimidate.
Right.
That's, again, and I say this all the time, we should all have an index card that tells us which animals we need to intimidate and which to you lay down and pretend you're dead with. Because I can't keep track in my head of which one you do which with.
Then the gorilla.
I see a spider at my house now. I lay down and pretend I'm dead so that the spider doesn't bite me.
You play possum?
Yep.
The animal picked the child up out of the moat, dragged him to another spot inside the exhibit, according to zoo officials. And I don't know if everybody can see. And then you're even more scared if you can't see the kid.
Right. Right. That would be.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that would be more frightening.
So it's a terrible tale of woe. It really is. This gorilla is just being a gorilla.
So now if you're the Cincinnati Zoo, and I bet other zoos also now have to reexamine the way their enclosures are around any animal that could potentially kill somebody, I bet nothing like this will ever happen again at the Cincinnati Zoo, right? They have to take every precaution in the world.
Yeah, but, you know, I think kids are going to learn from this, too. I hope they don't do a copycat thing because it looks cool and the kids survive because
right.
it may not happen that way right. next time.
Right.
I would love to talk to this kid. I mean, wouldn't you?
Get this kid.
I just want to know how he, like, was he freaking? Did he think he'd be okay? Because 4-year-olds are kind of invincible.
Right.
Right. Nothing's going to happen to me. My mom's over there. I'm at a zoo, for God's sakes.
Right.
I'm not in, you know, Africa where there's lowland gorilla hanging out.
And there was no, like if you were a kid at a zoo, wouldn't you go, well, these fences and gates are obviously here for a reason, but maybe at four that's not registering yet. Right?
That's what I was going to say. There's no way this child understands the enormity of this situation.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I can't
Otherwise, he wouldn't
that.
Have tried to sneak in to right. begin with.
Right. Because you have to look at these. Even those of us that were raised on cartoons, I mean, I know Magilla Gorilla was very nice to OG all the time. I get that. But you
How
go, that's
going
a cartoon.
Out? No, we know.
So you would think to yourself, there's too much danger. I'm not going to go through one or two barricades to get at these things.
And they're scary as hell. Have you looked into the eyes
Massive.
Of a gorilla?
Massive.
They're like 700 pounds. Who wants to get in there?
No.
I always wanted to go in there and play with the baby gorillas because I thought they were really cute. But then
right.
there's a big old dad and a big old mom standing there.
To protect them, yes. Yes.
Very, very sad. So we got to talk to this kid.
Kevin, find the kid. He's on it. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Second show for us for this Tuesday. Thrilled that you're here. 312-981-7200. Drew Peterson, still in jail and will remain in jail.
And here's my question that I just posed to you off the air. Kim, when you read that announcement that he's been found guilty of his latest charges, he's not getting out anytime soon, is he? Why?
No, I think now he's facing another 60 years.
Yeah, but
so he's
guys, he's not
for...
going to be
right.
out, so does it really matter?
I guess it would matter a lot more
point,
if he were free.
You know? I mean,
right.
That
right.
he's a bad dude.
It's just weird that like the last case, just at this point, unless people are working on it and not talking about it, that's just kind of gone the way of the Edsel. It's just a mystery. No one's doing anything with it. It's gone.
About where Stacy is?
With his last one, yeah. Is anyone still working on that? They've just given up on that, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's always an open case, but
are there actually detectives, are they doing anything to solve that?
That's
or at
a
this
great
point
question.
Do they just
well,
count
you know,
it as
I mean, cold cases do get solved, but
yeah.
you know, I'm sure there's always somebody actively on a case, but
I just
you know,
want
does work
know.
Get done on it every day? I don't know.
Right.
Don't you just want her body found?
I'm sure the family would love closure, of
right.
course.
I want closure.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know. It's one of those guys that wanted you to believe he was always in the wrong place at the wrong time, but I don't know how many people believed that.
And what was the draw to him with all these chicks?
Women loved him.
I know.
They absolutely loved him.
Well, he's in for 38 years right now, so he's...
And how old is he?
Let's see. He could be released in 2047 when he's 93.
You know, at that point, what's he going to do at 93?
Right.
If he's even alive.
And he faces now a minimum of 15 years additional
for this
crime. Yeah.
So I guess...
So he'll be over 100.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the difference between him ever getting out and never getting out.
Right.
So I guess I understand why they did
right.
that now.
That just kind of solidifies the fact that he's there for keeps. But in your lifetime, do you remember? Yeah. Oftentimes they would describe him. I remember and then they'd go, the charismatic Drew Peterson. And you go, yeah, but... He's using that charisma for all the wrong reasons.
But is he really that charismatic? I don't know, man.
His attorney at the time, I believe no longer his attorney, Joel Brodsky,
right.
when I was at LS, was a frequent guest. And he would always talk about how right in the heart of this, I mean, right in the middle of all this, when you would say to yourself, that is one bad hombre, that Drew Peterson, he would walk into local bars and the place would go nuts. They loved him. Women would come out of the woodwork to hang out with him, talk to him.
Even when these accusations were still
going on? Yeah.
There's a picture of him in the Sun-Times on the second page. And I'm not saying he's a bad-looking guy, but I mean...
But even if he were the best-looking man on the planet, body of work for a guy like Drew Peterson, right?
Dead body of
Let's
work.
Let's say...
Seriously.
Or missing body of
yeah.
work.
Yeah.
Let's say he was the handsomest of all handsomes. Then on the side you go, but he's also Drew Peterson, right? And people who are around him tend to either be dead or not show up anymore. So just based on that alone.
And he almost got away with the Kathleen Savio stuff, too. That's
very close.
What is just.
Very close. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had another violent start to the summer, another violent weekend here.
Six deaths, and then depending on what source you're reading or listening to, the number of shootings, because I know everybody who judges the weekend starts and ends it at a different start and end point, but six deaths for sure. And then somebody was spinning it as, I guess last year there were twice as many. Last year there were 12. So the spin is, look at the improvement in just 1 year.
It's still too many.
Six deaths is way too many in a weekend. Way too many. And all the shootings, it's just unbearable.
56 wounded by gunfire and six killed.
In a three-day weekend. That's awful.
Last year, only 43 people were wounded. So we're up with the wounding, but more people killed, 12. Right. That's still way too much.
Right. And that's at the very beginning of the season. I hate to refer to that as the season, but as the weather warms up, the numbers go up because there's more people outside and there's more friction. So those numbers get worse before they get better. But that's just so scary. You know, one of my daughters, Kylie, next year is going to New York to go to college. And there was a time where I would have been nervous about her going to New York. But New York's numbers are better than Chicago's numbers. New York and Los Angeles combined numbers aren't as bad as they are in Chicago in terms of shooting.
Did you think you'd ever really be saying that?
No. No. I didn't. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I guess if you can survive in Chicago and navigate in Chicago, New York's not such a bad thing. But no, when we were growing up, the fear of New York, and especially Central Park for some reason, you got, oh, please, be careful going to New York. Every time I've been to New York, I haven't felt overly safe, but I haven't felt, you know, everybody always puts it as, what is a dangerous city? What a dangerous, I never felt that in New York.
Yeah, but in New York City, I mean, in Chicago proper, in the Loop, it's not that dangerous, although there are getting more brazen people who are doing stuff.
Right, and we've talked about the police presence, especially on Michigan Avenue, which they have to do. I know people have argued and said this isn't where the police need to be. They need to be in the tougher neighborhoods. That's where the cops should be. But if Chicago, if Michigan Avenue gets really, really dangerous...
No one's coming here.
Right, it screws up everything. It screws up tourism. It is probably, if you look at it, it's probably more important to put the cops in the more dangerous areas, but that's a tough balancing act.
Absolutely. I like seeing the foot patrol officers.
Yeah.
Just makes it look like, you know, we're keeping things under control as best we can.
Do you ever remember seeing as many as we've seen in the last several months on Michigan Avenue?
Every once in a while you'd see the bike cops going by, but I never saw officers just walking around in
groups of three or four sometimes. Yeah, there's quite a presence. Several years ago, we're downtown having dinner. I've told you this. And there's a purse snatching. You see, we were at a restaurant downtown, but a block or so away, a little over a block away, you hear people going, get the guy, that's the guy with the purse. And there's a guy running and people chasing after him, two guys chasing after him. Within a couple of minutes, cops from everywhere, undercover cops, just everywhere, they got the guy. But people that you never would have thought were undercover cops, you go, wait, that lady's a cop and that guy's a cop? Those guys are cops? I don't know where they all came from.
But see, doesn't that keep you on the path to the straight and
narrow? Oh, I liked seeing that. I mean, was thrilled that I was shocked by how many people just came out of the woodwork and they were cops. I thought that's great.
You never know when that's coming up. It used to be an unmarked car. You could tell because it had like a...
The plate was different.
Yeah, municipal. I can't remember what the plate was, but now it's like you can see like this Trans Am hauling butt on the Stevenson, and then a little bit later you see that Trans Am that had pulled someone over.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
When I was a kid and shopping malls weren't as prevalent as they are now, we did most of our shopping at Ford City. And you would all, I remember my mom pointing out people. She'd say, see that guy over there? That guy's a police officer. And I go, he's not dressed like a police officer. There was just something in the way they carried themselves that you knew that guy over there is an undercover cop.
Add that to my list of
you can't tell when somebody is?
Who has had a breast augmentation, who's Jewish, who's gay, and who's an undercover cop. Add that to my
list.
But
you do the right thing. You always walk up to somebody and you ask them, and I think that's the best thing you can do. I always applaud when you do that. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show. If you want to join in, please do. We're at 312-981-7200. Bill and Wendy, WGN. L'essence.
Very good, Bill.
That means the sauce.
Serpico was an undercover cop. Did he look like a cop?
Yes.
He is the only one who did.
I think he did. Al Pacino.
And what was Huggy Bear? He wasn't a cop.
No.
A snitch?
No. Huggy Bear was a pimp.
He was?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
My God.
Huggy Bear was a pimp who helped. You know, he...
So kind of an informant.
He had a heart of gold. He would, yeah, he would help Starsky and Hutch sometimes.
Had a heart of gold as
heart
pimps
of gold.
Go, yeah.
Pimp with a heart of gold.
Well, there usually are hookers with hearts of gold.
No, he was a groundbreaking sex worker.
Which I can't believe. I didn't know what that meant
when Moby said it.
When
Moby was up here?
What is a sex worker? I just never heard that term.
You made Moby blush when you asked him that.
You know what should make the city blush?
Huh.
100 riders stranded on the new Ferris wheel. Did you hear about this on Friday
night? I did
hear
a little bit about this, yeah.
Was this the grand opening?
I don't think it was the grand opening. I don't think.
The Centennial Wheel, as it's called.
Because
it's in Centennial Park?
No, it's the 100th anniversary of Navy Pier.
Oh.
Although there were a lot of down years. It existed. Navy Pier was there. But for years and years and years, it was just rats, pretty much.
Yes, this happened around 100 riders were stranded just hours after the attraction opened to the public.
Oh, so it was the grand opening.
Holy, how does this happen? And what happened to the old Ferris wheel? Is that still there, or they removed that and built this bigger one?
Yeah, I think that one's gone.
It came to a halt when officials said it experienced a brief power outage Friday night.
Yeah.
That is not good.
That's scary.
A group of friends visiting from New Jersey shared cell phone video they took while they were stuck inside one of the gondolas. They're saying, you know, it was so sunny and nice, and then it just stopped. The actual car just started shaking a bit. The lights went on and off a few times.
That wouldn't be scary at all, would it?
How about it?
That would be so scary.
Caitlin Kane said... they went and said that there was something wrong and they were trying to fix it. Just stay calm. First of all, when someone says just stay calm, that's when I freak.
Right. Never tell people to just stay calm.
Just say, hey, everything's cool. We're going to get this thing moving again in a minute.
Right.
But you say stay calm. I'm the one freaking.
Don't ever say that to anybody.
So Caitlin Kane said, I got so nervous. We closed the windows and I was just like, quote, oh my God, this is not what I expected when I got on the Ferris wheel. Who expects that?
Right. Right.
Thank you, Caitlin. Navy Pier officials said passengers on the wheel were held in place for about 20 minutes. This is just after 8 p.m. before they were able to exit the ride. No one was injured, but
good
totally
news.
Shaken up.
Sure. I bet it seemed like a lot longer than 20 minutes to those people.
Oh, man.
Have you ever been on it? I'm embarrassed to say I've never been on it.
I get sick.
I don't get sick. It's just... the idea of, you know, because they have to, this is obvious, they have to load every car. So you get on it and then they move it ahead a little bit. You have to wait for the next one and then you wait a little longer and you wait a little longer.
Is that the ride? Cause
no, I think once everyone's on it, then they let it go around a couple times, I think.
Because we have a little fair that comes to LaGrange Pet Parade weekend, which is this weekend, by the way, and they always have a Ferris wheel, and Jim still takes the boys on it, and I stand from below and wave while drinking
wave.
A beer.
Right.
And, so it just seems like it never made the rounds. It's like it stopped at every place to load up, and then it's like, that's the ride?
Yeah.
But that's a small-time carnival, so I would imagine you'd get, once everybody's loaded up.
I'm pretty sure, not from the beer, you mean just loaded on the cars?
Yeah.
I think once everybody's on it, although I don't know how many cars are around that, but think about it. If the on and off time is 30 or 40 seconds, and I don't know how
more
many gondola
that.
Cars... you just ate up 12 minutes, 15 minutes just waiting for everybody to get on it.
Oh, sure. It takes a couple hours to take a ride on it.
It's too long.
In the beginning, it was kind of fun and, like, funny. We were joking around. This is Stephanie Gibson. But when we were at the top and we saw the storm coming and the rain coming, we were like, maybe this isn't so much fun anymore. I'm so happy to be on land, very relieved, probably going to call my parents, Kane said. And then power was restored to the Ferris wheel, but it's still unclear as to what caused the outage.
Think about how high up that is, too. You know, there's a lot of times you'll see footage of some ride at an amusement park that stops working, so they have to send up a cherry picker, a big ladder to get people down. Could you go down that ladder from the top of the Ferris wheel there? That's really high up. That's way too high up.
And then, they're going to say, stay calm
sure.
and climb down the...
Right.
No, I can't.
I'm going to panic.
I think they parachute them from that
They do?
Right. Count to three and pull.
Bob, we only have a minute here, but you have some info on the Ferris wheel debacle?
Yeah, it's a continuous load. It doesn't stop. And we've been watching the thing get built, and at night it's just brilliant. But it's continuous load, and it's supposed to either take you around twice or three times.
But it has to stop at some point because
they just push you off.
it's like the rides at Disneyland.
Oh, if it's like the walking sidewalk thing where you get on and it's still moving?
Like a ski lift.
Oh, okay. All right, I guess. That's scary, too.
I could not be able to ride that then. I'd be the one knocked in the back of the head.
Yeah.
Because I can't even go through a revolving door without stutter stepping,
Well, they
Bob.
Ask you in advance. They go, are you good with revolving doors? You're not? You can't go on the ride, ma'am. Sorry.
So you weren't around Friday night when it got stuck.
No, we watched him demonstrate it the other night with the lights and stuff. I mean, our office is right across the street in Lake Point Towers, and it's just absolutely amazing at night, all lit up. And then the new fountain down below in front of Navy Pier with all the LEDs and stuff is just crazy.
Is it a lot bigger than the old wheel was?
Oh, it's like 75. It's either 75 or 125 feet taller.
Wow, that's significant.
Oh, yeah. It's a big difference. Oh yeah, there was, you know, they had to take the old one out to replace the new hub, and we watched all that going on. I mean, it's.
Did you get any work done, Bob, or did you just stare at it? Because I'd be looking at it all day.
Well, we just sit there at our desk, you know, at our office table. We just sort of watch what's going on at Navy Pier all day long. It's just a lot of fun.
If it ever falls off its axis, it's going to roll through the city, you know, like in the movies.
It happens in every movie,
I know. Well, thank you for the information, Bob. Are you going to ride it sometime?
Oh, yeah. We're looking forward to it.
Excellent.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. Bye, guys.
And the new hub, by the way, is Hub Arkish. I just looked it up on their website.
It's funny because I was going to say Bob called from WBEZ.
All right, let's do this. We need to take a quick break. Steve has the news and then a whole lot more. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I hate to wait. I am not a very patient person, as you know,
Bill.
You
shouldn't have to wait.
No one should have to wait in the TSA lines.
Come on.
That were happening, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Where even the airlines were saying, get there 3 hours before a domestic flight or you're screwed. Basically, that's what it said on the memo.
It said that in those words. And how unfair is it? You're going to Florida, it's a 2.5 hour flight, but the line to get on the flight is 3 hours. That doesn't make sense. That is really bizarre. That doesn't make sense.
Well, we have invited Meg Graham in the studio, who is a reporter at Blue Sky Innovation, which is news and info about Chicago business, innovation, tech, the entrepreneurial scene. Would that about cover it for Blue Sky Innovation?
That's a great summary. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I saw this in the Chicago Tribune. There were different apps to help inform you as to how long you'd have to wait in line. Again, what was this, 2-3 weeks ago, where everything went haywire.
Right.
And the guy at Midway took a video that took him 3 hours to get through the line. There were reported 3 hour waits at O'Hare, and it was all really bad, and it seems like it's not really that bad anymore.
Yeah, so there are about, I looked at four different apps that are kind of trying to look at this. Actually, it's four different companies. Three of them have apps. One of them's a website. And they're just basically trying to help you figure out if it's going to take you, you know, how long it's going to take you to get through a certain checkpoint. So some of them use sort of crowdsourced data. So that's literally people going through and saying, oh, it took me 30 minutes.
Is this kind of like the Waze app?
So exactly. One of them's really trying to do it that way. So, but unlike Waze, which kind of does stuff in the background as you're going through, like as you're driving, Waze is just taking data from your phone as you go. This MeFlight, this app, actually, you have to kind of self-report. So you have to kind of, you know, finish going through security and then say, that took me about 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. So.
And then it averages, and that's MeFlight, MIFLIGHT.
Yeah. And then it uses that data and then some modeling and other information to kind of give you an estimate, whether it's, and that one is the one that will give you an estimate if it's over 30 minutes. The rest of these kind of say, oh, it'll take you 10 to 20, 20 to 30, or over 30 minutes, which
so
in
really
these situations is not high enough because some people are having much higher wait times.
Mm-hmm. Is the MeFlight a free app?
It's free, yes. So you just kind of go in, you can say, you know, I'm going to this checkpoint at this airport, and then it'll give you an estimate. The problem is we don't know how many people's data that's using. Maybe it's one person, maybe it's 30. You just, that's the tough thing, is we don't know how accurate that is at this point. So, I mean, it's worth looking at, but
it's averaging it. It's just not informing you. It's an average based on X
amount
of people.
So it might say, I looked this morning to see, you know, what are the wait times at terminal 3 or 2? And it says, well, as of 9 a.m., it was about 40 minutes or 20 minutes. So you kind of have to think, is it going to be a lot less or a lot higher than what
it's
it was at that
time?
It's
not an exact science in any way, shape, or form.
Right. But then if you look at the TSA's own app, it's called My TSA, that's essentially just giving you individual times at individual places. So someone might go through Terminal 3, Checkpoint 7 at 9 a.m. They'll say it took me 10 minutes or 11 to 20 minutes. But then you're just kind of going through all those and figuring out, like, it's going to be sometime between this and this, and you don't really know. You know, it's kind of, you have to do the own average.
Bill, you had a great idea, or some listener texted it in. You know, like when you're waiting in line at Disney, and it's like a 40-minute wait until you're on the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be that hard to have boards at certain checkpoints on wheels where you could move them, like, from this point on, you're 40 minutes away?
Well, the problem with that, though, is that every individual passenger is different. If they see something in your bag,
I guess
that could take 5 or 10 extra minutes. There's no way to know at certain checkpoints.
Right. It could just totally depend. It could be different from 11 to 11:30. Another thing that everyone I talked to kind of was saying is that the technology that we use to kind of estimate GPS doesn't really work inside that well at this point in time. So someday we could all have an app running in the background that says, you know, it'll take this much time, 35 minutes on average to get through this line. We just don't have that technology yet. We're kind of working on it. So that might help.
Yeah.
All right. So there's My TSA, and it's free, iPhone and Android.
That's free. And then there's iFly, which is $4. That's an app, but that uses data from this What's Busy, which is basically using modeling and TSA data to kind of guess in advance how long you're going to have to wait.
So in a weird way, these aren't really that accurate.
Well, the thing is, you could get an idea, but if it's going to be 3 hours, it's only going to tell you it's going to be more than 20 or 30 minutes, which it's not helpful. That's not going to let you say, oh, I can sleep in for an extra hour,
right,
or I can, you know, take the train instead of a taxi.
You need this information before you go to the airport, because whether or not you're in line, you'd have to be at the airport 2 or 3 hours
exactly
in advance. That's
so the other thing that, you know, at some point, maybe when they have multiple sources and they're able to do this, if there are multiple checkpoints at the same gate, like if, you know, if you could take 2 different checkpoints, one of them's an hour, one of them's 20 minutes, then that would be helpful.
Sure.
But it's a little tough to tell on these apps at this point in time which ones are moving more quickly.
All right. Now, it seems like the problem has been curtailed, at least for right now. Yesterday, Memorial Day weekend, isn't that one of the busiest travel weekends?
It
and
is.
It doesn't seem like there were, I haven't heard any news stories of people having these horrific waits at any airport.
I think it's gotten a lot better.
And they have hired new people, but see, that was the problem too. They let a lot of people go, and then you heard it's going to take a lot of time to train these new people, and even if we bring in 700 new TSA officers, it's not going to make a difference.
What happened then?
Yeah, what did happen?
Did they forego the training? Did they say we don't need training?
That's one thing they're saying. No, we're definitely not doing that. That's a good question. I think other airports, they have been hiring a lot. O'Hare, I think I've hired about 60, and they're trying to hire more. I think they're just throwing all their resources into fixing it. It doesn't look good.
And not just at our airports, but around the country, right?
Yeah, it's a problem. And plus, I mean, so many people now are trying to sign up for PreCheck. I think I read about 4,000 at this point last year daily were signing up. Now I think it's 15,800 every day are signing up for PreCheck.
Wow.
So that's, you know, getting actual appointments to join it will be tough because some people are trying to do it. But
change the line dimensions completely. Now the pre-check's going to be longer than the regular
That's
person.
What everyone's fear was.
Yeah, we'll see.
And the guy I was telling you about, my friend whose daughter went to Europe, he took his daughter for the pre-check, was it a week ago or a week of 10 days ago, and said that was a six-hour process to get her pre-check. Now she can use it for 5 years. That's the good news. But 6 hours to get that pre-check done.
So is that just at a walk-in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at the airport.
I think I read that to make an appointment right now, you wouldn't be able to get one until at least mid-July in right. any Chicago location.
Wow. So they do take walk-ups, but they said that they're going to take the people with appointments first. And if you go online to request an appointment, I heard that too, like mid to late July is when they can see you.
That's too long.
And of course, you know, I'm traveling in a week and a half. I'm right on top of these
things.
I'm
not sure
like
it'll work in a week and a half.
Do.
I'm not sure.
All right. So do you know, again, we're talking to Meg Graham. She's a reporter at Blue Sky Innovation. And you guys cover news and info about Chicago business innovation, tech, entrepreneurial issues and the scene out there. Do you know anything that's changed? Because I know before the airlines were saying get there 3 hours before a domestic flight. Has that been dropped back down to two hours?
I've seen 2 hours recently as of Friday. So I think 2 hours domestic flights is safe, and they're still saying 3 hours for international flights.
Meg, I'm on the no-fly list. How does this affect me?
Oh, boy.
Does that affect me differently?
We got a whole other radio show.
Really?
Deal
Trouble?
With you.
What about customs, though, for people who are going out of the country? That always takes a lot longer anyway. Has that changed dramatically because of all the TSA problems?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just flew recently domestic flight, and it was like nothing. It was so easy.
Really?
So I think it just really depends on the time.
I flew out of O'Hare.
It was so easy. I have heard, I talked to Peter Greenberg, who's a travel expert. He did say he's always told people fly out first thing in the morning. Yeah. Those are the best times. He's like, that has changed totally. Fly out from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. because that's when you're going to have the best times.
Yeah, because I heard 9 to 11 is peak time.
Yeah.
And 4 to 6.
And I'm not sure if that's just they're getting overflow from flights that didn't get out the night before or why that is. But 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. apparently is the time to do it.
All right. We have Suzanne who has a comment or question. You'll have to put some headphones on there. Meg Graham in the studio. Suzanne on the phone. What's going on, Suzanne?
Hi. I flew over the weekend out of Bloomington and then out of Atlanta. And we were surprised that this time the TSA was very much expedited. We went through in under 15 minutes.
Wow.
There's no requirement for unloading a laptop or electronics. I believe our phone, change, and liquids were the things that were required to be put in the bin. Shoes were left on. And so I'm wondering how TSA security is compensating for not checking all of these hazards.
Yeah, that makes me nervous. Like, cause
it made me a little nervous. I was happy to go through quickly, but I do wonder.
Because the computer, every time you bring a laptop, you have to take it out of its case. It's really a big pain in the butt.
Right.
And shoes and belts, and you didn't have any of that going on.
No, kept the shoes on, and it said expedited security.
So did you, so when I flew back from my recent trip, they just gave me sort of pre-check without, I don't have pre-check, but it was kind of a
randomized
thing.
They gave it to you?
Is that what you got as well? Or was it this just in the regular line?
The sign said it was expedited. And there was really no understanding of why it was expedited this time, but there were no lines. And so Memorial Day weekend in Atlanta, and we walked through. I know they have the body scan, and my husband goes through that because he has two artificial knees. And that was just a straight walk through. Usually it's a pat down. It's, you know, the whole thing. This was very simple, but it does makes me a little apprehensive.
Yeah, if they're like cutting back on the security end of the TSA.
That's not good.
I mean, you know what? I'd rather wait an hour and a half, 2 hours in line if they can ensure it's going to be a non-exciting flight.
Right, true.
Me too.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Meg Graham in the studio, 312-981-7200. I'm curious if you flew this weekend either in or out of the city.
Right.
Want to check on your wait times.
Right.
Bill F., Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right, flying is no longer fun.
Right. Those days are over.
And, you know, I feel sorry for the TSA people sometime. I mean, they're doing their job. They're doing what they're required to do. We got a call a little while ago from a listener who said she got on, was it in Atlanta?
Yeah.
And she was able to go to an expedited line.
Right.
Meg Graham in the studio with us from Blue Sky Innovation, part of the Chicago Tribune umbrella. You had mentioned that every once in a while you'll randomly get a little pre-certified check on your ticket. Is it visible to the naked eye, or would we miss it?
Yeah, I mean, it's visible, but it's probably something that you would need to look for. If you knew what it looked like, then you could say, oh, great. Because I always look for it now, because I like I mentioned a couple minutes ago, I mean, maybe three quarters of the times I've flown, I don't have pre-check, but I do get this pre-check for, you know, a certain single flight. And then that's great, because you just go through the pre-check line. You don't have to take off your
shoes. What's in it for them to do that? Is it just for you to get a taste of it and say, I like this, maybe I'll buy this?
That's a great question. And I don't know, and there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. Sometimes I'll get it on the way going and won't get it coming back.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's definitely, you get to see kind of what the experience is like. And I wonder if they just do that also to help expedite lines a little
maybe.
Bit. Yeah. I don't know how they decide who gets it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't look like a terrorist, if I may say that, Meg.
You act kind of like one, but you don't look like one.
But how do they know you're not? How do they just automatically, I mean, do you fly a lot?
I don't fly a lot. And I wonder, I mean, they have your, you know, your name, social security number, so maybe they're using that information, or I really don't know.
Meg, I always request a second pat-down. Is that still allowable?
Okay.
Oh, right, Bill, just stop it. I wonder now, I again, fly maybe once a year. I'm wondering if I ever got that pre-certified and didn't even know what it meant.
Yeah.
I bet a lot of people don't know what that means and wouldn't.
And I'm wondering if the previous caller had actually gotten that and didn't know how to look for it. Because it's harder to see. I don't know if you guys do this, but I just do it on my iPhone. I get my mobile ticket and then I can just have them scan the code. But, you know, it's easier to see on a paper ticket than if you're just doing it on your phone.
Sure.
I don't even know if you would know.
Hmm.
All right. Pat has a comment. Pat, we're talking to Meg Graham from Blue Sky Innovation. We're talking about travel because the travel season has officially kicked in because of Memorial Day weekend. How are you, Pat?
I'm just fine. Thank you. I was telling him I had made an appointment about 3 weeks ago. And then last week I went to the facility over on, I think it was Sacramento and Belmont. I was in and out within 15 to 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes.
Right. And that was for the pre-check. And then they said it would probably take about 30 to 45 days so you could get the numbers that you could put on your tickets and stuff. I received that over the weekend.
Wow.
So bang, bang, boom.
So, I mean, I don't know what facility these other people are going to, but like I said, the one I went to, it was really quick. And again, I made the appointment a couple weeks ago, so
I wonder
hopefully everybody could get in.
I wonder if you just got right in there before the mad rush. It sounds like.
Oh, yeah, because was it before all these problems that were people were saying they were waiting in line for 3 hours, or was it since that?
It was just about that time, because I thought I better go do a pre-check, because we like to go to Florida and stuff in the winter. So I thought, well, I'll just take a chance, and it just all kind of fell in place.
Doesn't it bother you, though, paying $85 for that, Pat?
No, because my husband and I are up in our later years, and it's a lot easier for us to go through a pre-check than rather standing in line for a long time.
I guess that makes sense. Well, safe travels to you, Pat.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Take care. But to your point, Wendy, you go, I'm paying an extra $85 per person just because you guys are understaffed. That hurts a little bit. You shouldn't have to pay that money.
But that's why I don't do it, and that's why I'm going to be waiting longer than most people, and so are you.
I know.
It is nice to not have to take your shoes
off.
Oh,
yeah.
That's pretty
huge.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, you know, remember the days, and Meg, you're probably not old enough to remember the days where people used to dress up on flights.
Yeah.
And you'd wear, like, your Sunday go-to-meeting clothes
right.
and your nice shoes, and now I'm telling you,
Wendy
it's
and I
like
were going
flip-flop.
To a Herbert Hoover rally, and it took us 5 minutes to get there. It's fantastic.
I wear flip-flops now because it's just so easy
right.
then to take your shoes off.
Sure.
I know I look a little sloppy, but what are you going to do? Hey, Jason, you got a pre-check, but your kids didn't, or the other way around?
It's the other way around. We flew to Alaska last summer, and we were pre-checked 3 out of 4 times, and we only got it right once. The first time we didn't know we were pre-checked. Everybody was. We were in the wrong line, so they kicked us over to the other line. And then the second time, we actually got it right, and everybody went through the pre-check, which was great. Then the third time, they pre-checked our kids, but not us.
Oh,
so we went to the pre-check line.
That's not fair.
And then Yeah, and then they told us, well, the kids can come through here, but you got to go stand in the line. It's going to be 20 minutes.
How old were the kids? Because really, I mean, common sense would say, no, yeah. You're not going to do that.
Right, 7 and 11. So you're not going to leave them in an airport in a different city and go through the other line. So we went through two lines that time. So we were a little frustrated with the way it worked.
It should be the whole family. If somebody gets pre-checked, it should be
nope,
everybody.
Just the kids.
Sorry.
Right. Yeah. Right, and all the tickets were purchased together, so I don't know. Yeah, it was. We were a little lost with the whole system.
But so you're not willing to pay the $85 per person to get the pre-check, right? You're just going to play it by ear?
No, never. Nope. Yep, well, I'd stand in the line before I... We don't fly enough, and it was just... Yeah, it wasn't worth it.
Cool. Thanks for sharing with us. I'm not buying it either. No. I'm just hoping that, you know, a two-hour pre-flight arrival is good enough.
You would hope. Yeah.
I don't know. Meg Graham, thank you so much. Reporter at Blue Sky Innovation. And is there a website for Blue Sky Innovation?
Yes, blueskyinnovation.com. ChicagoTribune.com/bluesky.
Pretty simple. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thanks, Meg. We'll take a quick break. Then Steve has the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Oh,
isn't this beautiful?
I'm sorry.
It was right with the beat there.
I know. I turned it on right as you were clearing your throat. Ooh. You can handle your own button. It's just when you do, you usually forget.
Yep.
All right. I'm not touching your button anymore.
Snoop Dogg's upset. This is the magic of Snoop Dogg, Wendy.
Oh, this is Snoop?
Yeah. He is the man who invented the phrase, schnizzle my dizzle. He also invented the phrase, whizzle my fnizzle.
What was the second word?
He just said, you know, I don't know if people, I hope everybody by this point has heard Snoop Dogg talk. Because anytime he makes a speech, he just keeps saying that, schnizzle my whizzle, fizzle my gwizzle. And then he's done and people go, that man is a genius, that Snoop Dogg. And I don't understand it.
He makes me laugh. He is just so high all the time.
All the time.
And you know
what?
All the time. Whatever.
He had a TV show called Dougie Fizzle Televizzle, if I'm not mistaken.
Everything in his world ends with izzle. Everything.
How would he say drizzle?
He would not say it because it's too easy for him. He would just say light rain. So he's upset because here's why Snoop Dogg is upset.
Because he ran out of weed?
He ran out of weed. And then on top of that, they started showing this new version of Roots
on
the History Channel.
Everybody's talking about this.
And he says, Snoop Dogg says, that has to stop. We can't show that anymore. Because he says, I will read you the direct quote, but he says that shows like Roots and 12 Years a Slave, the movie.
Yes, they're the izzle. They're drizzly. They're not the shizzle.
They're not that. Right. All right. Now, I'm going to read you what he said, but keep in mind when Snoop Dogg talks, he tends to swear a lot, not as much as you.
Will
but
you
he does,
stop it?
He does swear a lot, so I will clean it up for the goodness of mankind.
Faux shizzle.
Exactly. Snoop Dogg, it says here, rapper and actor Snoop Dogg is now calling for a boycott of the new Roots miniseries. In the video that he made for Instagram that is also on Twitter, and I didn't know you could be on both. Can you have one message on both? I thought you had to have separate messages. You can have both, I guess.
You are a techno wizard, Izzle.
Snoop Dogg rails against the remake of Roots, which premiered last night, Monday. It's a four-part miniseries on the History Channel. Oh, it's on History, A&E, and Lifetime. Did you know that?
No.
I thought it was just on History. The remake is based on the ABC landmark 1977 miniseries of the same name. This was taken from Alex Haley's 1976 novel, Roots, obviously. It explained the horrors of American slavery. Here's what Snoop Dogg says, and I will clean it up. I'm sick of this. How the blank are they going to put Roots on Memorial Day? They're just going to keep beating that blank into our heads as to what they did to us, huh? He has taken exception to the portrayal of slavery in Roots in the movie 12 Years a Slave, which won a Best Oscar in 2014 for Best Supporting Actress Lupita Nyong'o. I don't understand America, says Snoop Dogg, which is good because many of us don't understand him, so it's equal. They just want to keep showing the abuse that we took hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but guess what? We're taking the same abuse, he says. Think about that part. when we all go make a blank series about the success that, why don't we go and make a blank series about the success that black people are having? The only success we have is Roots and 12 Years a Slave.
What about the Jeffersons?
Well, that's one example, but there's others. There's,
Black-ish.
Yeah. Black-ish is one. Did you ever see the movie Happiness with Will Smith?
I mean,
I could, if you gave me time, I could give you 20 of these, but it's not just slavery, but if it's a show or a movie about slavery, you have to show the slavery.
And
it educates.
I was just going to say, we have a lot to learn about. When the Roots was on the first time, the original series.
Yeah.
Astounding. I will just say that.
I guarantee you there are plenty of people who saw the original Roots or 12 Years a Slave or will now see the remake who may have heard a little bit about slavery, knew that it existed, but didn't know how gut-wrenchingly awful it was. When you see, did you see 12 Years a Slave?
I haven't
There's
seen
scenes
it yet.
In there that you almost can't look at the screen. It's so painful to watch a guy being whipped for absolutely no reason at all. It affects you so emotionally, and I think that that's a learning process. And as painful as it is,
it's history that you can't change.
Exactly.
It happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Faux shizzle.
That's what I was gonna say.
He's crazy.
And then it goes into, well, I don't know if this is important. This is just kind of the cast list of who's in it.
And LeVar Burton is the
executive producer. Yeah, he is the co-executive producer of this. It says, Snoop Dogg says he will not watch Roots and calls upon other African Americans to follow suit. Here's what he says. Let's create our own blank based on today, how we live and how we inspire people today. Black is what's real, he says. Now, Snoop Dogg has some cash. He's done pretty well for himself financially. He has the power. He can make a show. If Snoop Dogg went to a network and said, look, I get it. You wanted to show Roots and you had 12 Years a Slave, but I want to do a show about positive. They would go, yeah, let's do that show. They wouldn't say no to him. They would let him do that.
He doesn't have an idea right now. He'll come up with one.
If he's got an idea, Hollywood is listening. They always want new ideas, good, bad, or they want to create new programming. They're not going to say no. No network executive is going to go, yeah, your idea is a little too positive for us. Thank you, though. Nobody's ever going to say that. So he wants all African Americans to boycott the show Roots because, as he said, enough is enough, or if nizzle's a fnizzle, or whatever he says.
I want to know who has joined forces with him.
With Snoop Dogg?
Yeah, who is also boycotting it? He's called for a boycott, but who's doing it?
I don't see anybody else on board with this right now.
No, and I'm looking. Oh, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Is she?
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I Googled who's joined Snoop Dogg's boycott of Roots, and nothing's coming up. So boycott doesn't work when you don't get people to do it with you.
I don't think anybody made Roots, and I'll use 12 Years a Slave also because he uses it. These are his examples, Roots and 12 Years a Slave. Nobody made that to be negative. They made it because it was an important part of history. And if you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. So by showing this, I mean, there have been plenty of movies about the Holocaust, and it's awful to watch. It pulls at your heartstrings to watch, but it's the same thing. You go, you can't just ignore it. And by showing it, you're showing people how awful and wrong it was.
And don't you remember watching Roots when we were younger?
Didn't miss a minute.
I mean, I couldn't believe.
Right.
It made me feel guilty and bad about being white.
Right.
I'm not kidding.
Right.
And so with this remake and with 12 Years a Slave, it educates the kids who haven't seen this.
Right.
And didn't see the original.
Right.
He's crazy as the shizzle.
Yes, he is.
It's kind of fun to say, maybe I'm going to do izzle everything instead of swearing.
He says it all the time.
Well, because he doesn't want to swear.
I've never seen him not say it. Jimmy Kimmel has him on all the time. And like whatever question they ask him, he just does that izzle stuff. And you go, okay, I get it. You put the word izzle at the end of words.
Is that instead of swearing? Because maybe I'm going to
start
using it.
He'll swear and end those words with izzle.
All right. Well, that doesn't help my purpose.
Well, yeah, How did that start? What was he doing one day? What he was saying? I'm just going to end a lot of my words with the word izzle for no reason. Was he at a party at Ted Bessel's house?
from that girl?
Yeah. Donald Hollinger? Maybe he loved Ted Bessel. He's like, I'm going to pay tribute to Ted Bessel by saying, well, Issel isn't the same.
No.
Dan Issel played basketball. Was he a friend of his? I don't understand why this started.
I'll find out for you.
All right. Are you going to go to Google Issel? They've got the full explanation.
Yeah. Should we take a break?
All right, yeah, a break. If you have thoughts on this, please join in at 312-981-7200. Snoop Dogg says, stay away from roots. We've seen slavery enough already. Let's get past it. Let's do something positive. Do you agree or disagree? 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm waiting for the Issel.
Issel.
Yeah, this is Snoop Dogg.
This is nice. I like this.
Well, I've been looking at some information, urbandictionary.com. Sometimes you get accurate stuff there, sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
He was originally called Snoopy. That's what his mom nicknamed him at the age of 8.
Because he used to lay on top of a doghouse with a little bird, yellow bird.
And Woodstock. Dream of World War One.
Yep. The Sopwith Camel.
At the age of 8, his mother nicknamed him Snoopy because his eyes appeared the same as the lovable TV character.
That's
what do you
nice
mean?
When you get ragged on by your mom. He looked like Snoopy when he was a kid. He had droopy eyes, so his mom capitalized on it by calling him Snoopy.
Snoopy didn't have droopy eyes.
A little bit. I mean, not...
He does look like Snoopy.
A little bit.
The eyes.
Yeah.
He took the name Snoop Doggy Dog when he began recording, but changed it to Snoop Dogg in 96.
Because he was getting older.
Right, no more doggy.
Got to legitimize your name a little bit.
As a rapper, Snoop happens to be known for his laid-back approach to rapping.
Way laid back.
He's also known for his marijuana use.
Yeah.
And people often mistake Snoop Dogg for inventing the famous language and now lyrics involving the addition of Issel to words. This was actually created by Frankie Smith and the Gap Band.
Really? I didn't know that. I thought it was Snoop Dogg who invented that.
I don't know who.
They don't do it as much as him. Nobody does it as like the whole, everyone on the planet combined don't do it as much as he does.
Well, he got a laugh once or eight times.
Right,
and
so
then
he
went,
stuck
yeah.
with it.
I know. Snoop enjoys calm lyrics of Frank Sinatra and refers to him as the original gangsta.
That would be a great album of Snoop Dogg just doing Frank Sinatra songs.
It would.
I've got you under my skizzle. Wouldn't that be a great, I would buy that the first day it came out. I'd love to own that.
I would do it myself. He has
the summer whizzle is coming Issel across the sea Issel. I want that.
It's just Issel. You can't
right.
go Issel.
Right.
He supports the LA Lakers, Pittsburgh Steelers.
But not Roots.
No, he doesn't. You know what his birth name was?
Mm-mm.
Calvin Cortazar Broadus Jr.
That's a cool name. That's way cooler than Snoop Dogg. I like that name.
Are you crazy?
I would go with that name. I may go with that name if it's open.
All right. According to a study performed in Massachusetts at the Institute of Technology, they have evaluated him as the best connected rapper in the world. This titles him as the boss. Really?
Connected in what way, though?
Connected, you know.
Just like he can get anything done? Then why can't he get a TV suit?
Connected to the gangstas.
Oh.
Connected.
All right, that kind of connected. All right, that makes more sense.
He's been nominated for Grammy Awards, yet not rewarded for his efforts.
Can I tell you the weirdest thing about him? Every time I saw him in my head, he had about 10 years on me. I thought, this guy's at least 10 years older than me, maybe more. And he's quite a bit younger than me.
I don't have his age.
I think he's in his mid-40s.
No way.
I'm serious. I thought he was older than me, like by a lot.
No way.
It doesn't say his birthday in there?
I'm looking at other things.
I'll find it.
He's been nominated for 8 Grammy Awards.
But has not won.
No.
He's like Susan Lucci.
And
he was the original choice to play Erica Kane. How's that for ironic?
Shizzle.
Right. Right. Erica Kizzle.
You want to hear his endorsements and products? Because this is pretty funny.
Rolling Papers?
No, but
Twinkies.
They should get on it. Snoop Dogg's Footlong Hot Dogs manufactured in Massachusetts.
That's really funny.
That is good. This
That's
again,
very
UrbanDictionary.com. Snoop Dogg Board Company, SDBC, Skateboards and Luggage.
I can see that.
Snoop Youth Football League and Snooper Bowl.
What is that?
I don't know. chronic candy that tastes like marijuana from Switzerland and is currently banned in some cities of U.S. Does nice. Marijuana taste good? I don't think so. Doggy Biscuits shoe brand in cahoots with Pony. And Snoop Dogg clothing, which is streetwear.
How old did I say Snoop Dogg was?
40-something.
He's 45 years old. He was born October 20th, 1971. He's 45. Whenever you'd see him, didn't you go, well, that guy's older than me? Well, he's got to be.
You know, Snoopy always looked older than most dogs.
That's true, too. That's true, too. All right.
I am shocked that I thought he looks older.
Right. Doesn't he?
Better lay off the weed.
Call him and tell him that. I think he was just waiting for one person to tell him that.
Right.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I found a story about a man who I admire greatly.
Snoop Dogg?
Well, I do, well, for different reasons. For different reasons. A peeved Texas man.
Peeved?
Peeved meaning upset. A man who lived in Texas and was upset. A peeved Texas man paid his speeding ticket fine by dumping roughly 22,000 pennies on the counter at a Frisco municipal court recently. When my fine came due, I just decided I may as well pay with pennies and we'll make a big spectacle out of it, said Brett Sanders. This to the NBC affiliate in Dallas-Fort Worth. Sanders' protest transaction was approaching a million views on Tuesday morning after he posted the video to YouTube on May the 22nd. You're in luck, he told the clerk as he approached, holding large buckets. I have exact change. He then dumped the contents onto the counter.
And was arrested for contempt of court. That is and not
they,
right.
They spilled onto the floor. Mail me my receipt, he said as he walked away. I'm not a big fan of extortion, he, Brett Sanders, wrote in his YouTube description. I was convicted by a jury for driving 39 in a 30-mile-per-hour zone and was subject to $212 at the barrel of a gun.
Wow.
It took clerks 3 hours to count the pennies.
After, yeah, seriously. Right. How long did
paid.
It take him?
To gather all those pennies?
Yeah, I mean...
22,000 pennies?
I would lose count. At like 1,201.
He didn't have them in rolls like usually.
Yeah, no, they were
loose. People roll them up. They were all loose and in big giant buckets. He must be strong to carry that many pennies. It took the clerks 3 hours to count the pennies after taking them to Coinstar locations around the city. In the end, Sanders had overpaid by $7.81.
That's a bonus.
Right.
For your trouble.
Right. Those extra 781 pennies, that's on me, fellas. Enjoy yourselves. Yeah, and this is legal. There's nothing that says you can't pay your fine using all pennies. He just said, you mess with me, you give me a ticket for me going 9 miles over, I mess with you, here's your pennies.
But he broke the law.
He, well, yeah, but what's...
So whose fault is it that he got the ticket?
Have you ever been... One time I was stopped and ticketed for going 4 miles over the speed limit. 4 miles. And it was my first... No, my second ticket ever... So I just accepted it. You know, I did everything you're supposed to do. Thanked the police officer at the end. Thank you, sir. I'll drive much more carefully. And then I did for a couple of days. And then back to my speeding ways. But, I mean, depending on where the area was, I know the law is the law and the limit's the limit, but it's just 9 miles over.
Just 9 miles.
Is it worth $212 for 9 miles over? That's a lot.
I have a story I want to share, but I don't know if I should share it on the air.
Why, you can.
I don't know. I told you off the air. I'm not even going to say it. We got a $250 ticket.
Oh, I know in your family you did.
Yeah, and it's not fair.
For something, I know we have to be kind of general in this. Somebody in your family got a ticket for doing something that is... It's technically not right, but it's not quite wrong either. It was a traffic infraction, but
yes,
it's not.
Yes, it was where a bunch of parking spots are.
Yeah.
There are a couple of 15-minute only spots.
Right.
And I think there are two of those, and then there is a handicap spot.
Yeah.
And someone in my family was dropping off another person in my family, thought he pulled into the 15-minute parking, didn't, but there was a lot of traffic. So he just was going to put it in reverse and get out. And a police officer pulled up and said, let me see your placard. And he said, I don't have a placard because I'm not parking.
Right.
Oh, well, I saw you put it in park. But he never left the vehicle. And he, when realizing he was in the handicap spot instead of the 15-minute spot, he went to back out. We got a $250 ticket, and we contested it, and it's still, we had to pay it.
It stood. So he went in there. He never got out of the vehicle.
Never, no, but he put it in park, according to the police officer, but yeah, never exited the vehicle. And when he realized, oh, this isn't the 15-minute parking spot,
right,
I'm going to back up. Traffic was coming, and in that, what, 30 seconds before he could back out, a cop pulled up. Where's your placard?
He was only in that spot for 30 seconds.
It was a definite short amount of time, like a minute or two, and never left the vehicle. And I
hazard lights or no hazard lights?
No, because he thought he was in the 15-minute parking spot, but he didn't park. He didn't exit the vehicle. And the police officer said, well, you put it in park, that counts.
Right.
It doesn't really.
Right.
You never left the vehicle, and I disputed it, and it
no
came
luck.
Back as, no, you owe $250.
Oh, that's not right.
It really isn't.
That isn't right.
I should have paid him in all pennies.
Now,
why didn't I know this story?
If you thought about that as an option, as a way of saying, okay.
But that's the poor clerk who's at the desk who didn't have anything to do with writing the ticket.
Right. That's rough. That doesn't seem right.
It sure really doesn't. I'm sorry, it really doesn't. Hi, Fred. You're familiar with a story like this?
Yes. My son parked in a spot he did not know was a handicapped parking spot because the handicapped parking thing was painted on the pavement and it was covered with snow.
And there wasn't a sign?
No sign.
Then how do you...
So this was some time ago when they were first trying to start putting more of those parking spots in, and they didn't have a sign, but they painted it on the pavement. And it was covered with snow. He parked there and got a ticket.
That's not fair either.
It doesn't seem fair. It seems, because listen to me, there should be handicapped spots, and those people deserve them. I would never, ever park in one spot.
Not.
I really wouldn't.
Right.
Nor would your son. But there are extenuating circumstances. And that, if it's not a visible sign sticking up like that you would look at as you pull into the spot, what are you supposed to shovel every spot before you, just to double check?
And the people that cheat on those really irks me. When you see somebody pull up and they get out and they walk to the thing, you think, and they have the placard. Now, how do they get the placard? Maybe somebody in the family qualifies or...
I'll tell you that right now. My aunt had a placard, and when she died, you could use it if you wanted to, and we threw it out.
Right.
But that's how people obtain them, and then they use them for their... I don't even park in a pregnant woman's spot. I don't. when I was pregnant,
right,
I didn't.
Right.
I guess I should just say that part of it.
Right.
Well, technically, I would qualify for a handicap sticker, but I don't take it either. Because there's nothing wrong with my legs. I can walk. I have other problems, but I can walk. So I don't use it.
Look at you, standing up and doing it the right way. Good job, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
See you guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
I just thought, no park, no stop, no standing. That's different than no parking. This wasn't parking. It really does irk me.
I think I've told you this. At the Dairy Queen in Wilmette, it's one of the older Dairy Queens, and just the way it is, I think there's 6 parking spots. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, maybe 8. But in the middle of the summer, even now, on a hot night, there's going to be more than 8 cars at that Dairy Queen. So there's a parking lot right next door that's wide open at night. There's businesses in there that are mostly closed at night. So people, despite the fact that there's a sign that says don't park in that parking spot, people think, I'm going to run into Dairy Queen, get an ice cream cone, and 5 minutes later I'll be back in my car. Except there's somebody there waiting all the time that either gives you a ticket or boots your car. It's like the biggest trap in the world.
Yeah.
It's not fair. It's not fair at all.
And that, again, you could say, well, it says don't park here. And if you leave the vehicle, you technically have parked there.
Right.
I'm just whining because he didn't get out of the car.
Well, and you should, because that's not fair. Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like a right thing.
I know.
How come that Dairy Queen still gets business?
Oh, they get tons of business. I mean, they get crazy
they the
amounts
ones
of business.
Calling?
No. They're not calling. It's the people who own the building next door with this huge parking lot
when no one's
that isn't
using
being
it.
Used.
See, that's not right. Can't we all just help each other?
You would think.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi. You know what? I love you guys, but I am so mad right now.
Why?
Okay. You cannot judge somebody having a handicap placard by the way they walk out of their car.
Oh no. We never said that.
Wendy knows that. We know that.
The guy, the caller that you just had, he parked in a handicap spot and he walked out and he looked just fine. The guy, one or two callers before me.
So here's the thing. I guess he did sort of say that, but yes. But he said he qualifies to get a handicap placard and doesn't because he can walk just fine and chooses to do that.
But that's the thing, walking just fine. Like there are grown-ups with epilepsy that you don't see. There are kids with severe autism or other issues that the parents need that handicapped spot. You just can't, just because somebody could walk or run out of their car once they park in a handicapped spot. My friend's husband has brain cancer. She has a placard. But you'd never know by looking at him, but he has seizures every 20 minutes.
I don't think he meant, I'll just walk on my own, I think, is what he should have said.
Yeah, it wasn't worded as good
as
it could
I don't
have been
think
worded.
He was. There are a lot of people, though, Leslie, that have a handicapped person in the family, and when they're no longer driving, there are other people in the family that use those placards because they never take them back.
Well, but they don't. But you know what they're doing now, or the state of Illinois anyway is doing? Every placard is attached to the driver's license. So any traffic cop could pull up the placard. And if it's, I can't use my placard in your car without, you have to go to the village and get something for your windshield. You can't just transfer car to car anymore.
When did that start? I didn't know that happened. Is that new?
It's been at least the past year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Every time we have to take my parents' placard into one of our cars, we have to call the village and let them know. Otherwise, I can get a ticket.
Oh.
So you can't, if Aunt Bessie dies, you can't all of a sudden have a handicap.
Right, right.
It doesn't work anymore.
All right.
But Leslie, I really don't think that caller meant it. Like, I can walk on my own.
Okay.
I don't. Okay. I think his phrasing
the wording
might
was
have,
a little off.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
But I didn't take offense to that, and I'm sorry you did, Leslie. Will you still listen?
All is forgiven. I love you guys.
Thanks, Leslie. You too. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, we have to take a break, and I'm done whining, but other people want to whine.
Yeah, whine away. 312-981-7200. It's your whine hotline. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, this all stemmed from a guy who got a speeding ticket going 9 miles over the limit. His bill was $212.
Yeah, he paid all in pennies. He had 22,000 pennies, and he paid his bill $212 for going 9 miles over the speed limit. This was in Texas, so I guess technically he showed them by paying them in pennies. But now are they keeping an extra eye open for this guy from now on? Do they go, hey, all right, we mess with you, you mess with us, now it's our turn. Are they keeping an eye open for this guy from now on?
I don't know, and it's not fair because that's why we didn't want to contest the ticket that we got.
Oh, in your case,
because you don't want to become a target. But
right.
When you're wrongly given a ticket, I think you should be able to contest it.
Sure.
We didn't win, but right. Hi, John, how are you?
Hey, how you guys doing? I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, John.
I'm streaming you online and listening to you in Wisconsin.
Oh,
excellent. Hey, have some cheese curds for us, will you?
Oh, sure. I was at that same Dairy Queen you're talking about a few weeks ago. Had my wife and daughter with me.
Yeah.
Pull in, no place to park. Park in that spot, next to them. Sort of where that, I think it was a Jimmy John's. And
Jimmy John's and a Starbucks, yeah.
Yep. My wife and daughter get out, go get an ice cream. I'm still sitting in the car. I'm seeing a text to my other daughter. All of a sudden, I hear this click, and my wife then is yelling. I look out. And what she told me was that as they're walking back with their ice creams, a guy walks up to them and says, is this your car? Now, I'm still sitting in the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, yes. And as soon as he said yes, a girl jumped from behind another car and ran up and slapped the boot on the car.
It's happened to friends of mine the exact same.
I thought only police could put a boot on your car.
No.
I'm going to get some boots.
It almost came to fist fight. I was so angry. and we're yelling at each other. And now I think about it, I should have just said, fine, we'll just leave the car parked there. You can turn it off if you want to. Because what they do is they know that unless someone comes up and pays them the fine on the spot, I haven't got $103 at the ATM machine at the little convenience store.
That's a racket, man.
It's straight up extortion. How much? And what did it end up costing you, John, to get the boot off the car?
$130.
Yeah, $130 just to go get some ice cream next door. That's terrible. My friend had the exact same story last summer,
and he was still in the car.
He was still in the car,
and
he felt the car shaking. And he goes, "What's shaking the car?" And he looks back, and it's a guy putting a boot on his car. It's the security guard at the building. It's terrible, isn't it?
I didn't hear it. That was hard. I was going to go back, and I thought it might be worth $103 to go back and film the whole thing and expose it. And
everybody knows about it, it seems.
There's been stories in the Tribune about it. I've read stories a couple of times. There's nothing they can do. It's private property. It's businesses, and it's private property.
Public service announcement. Don't park there, people, unless you want that ice cream cone to cost $130. Sorry that happened, John.
That's
Thank
awful,
you for
John.
Listening.
It's just the sneakiness of it. The girl behind the car jumping out at the last minute to do it when they found
That's
out it was
terrible.
The car. You know, it was just, the whole thing's messy.
It's like she's lurking in the bushes because if you saw somebody walk up, you'd go, oh, I'm sorry, I'll move my car.
Right.
But they like slink down underneath so you don't see them till you hear the car boot clicking.
Yep.
That's
exactly
terrible.
Right.
Terrible.
Exactly.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening in Wisconsin. That just stinks.
Isn't it terrible?
Hi, Cindy.
Hi. For out of 60 years of driving, I'm in my 80s, and I've been driving for 60 years. And I'm not a dragger. You know, I'm polite. I let people out, and people pass me and everything. But I was coming to a corner. I wanted to make a right turn, and very light day, nobody coming. But the guy to my left was way over the white line, so I pulled out a little bit to peek around him. Nobody's coming. I turn the corner and get this lousy ticket for $100 because I didn't come to a complete stop. For two lousy seconds out of 60 years, I had to pay $100. So I went to court, and there were like 100 people, but I was one of the first in line. And when he says, well, you didn't stop, and he showed me the movie, and no, I didn't come to a complete stop, and nobody was there, and 2 seconds, for heaven's sake. So I says in a very loud voice, I've been screwed, and I turned around to all the 100 people behind me and says, you're all going to be screwed, too, and I walked out. I ended up paying the lousy $100.
But you felt better, didn't you?
Yeah, they probably come and tow my poor little car away, but it isn't always fair, but I love you, too.
Cindy, thank you. You, too.
Bye.
Thanks, Cindy. I think we have time for one more.
I've been screwed, she yelled. I didn't see that coming.
I didn't either. Yeah. Hi, Kathy. You're our last call on this.
Hi. I'm disabled, and I have a placard, but if you looked at me, you wouldn't know I was disabled, but every step I take feels like glass grinding in my spine.
Oh. People
and
shouldn't judge people.
I have a lot of people say to me, you don't need that spot. You're not disabled. I had somebody said, you're not disabled. Here, wash this off your car. And she threw her coffee at me. And every time they do a story about this on the news, I know I'm going to hear about it the next day.
Sure.
Well, everybody should mind their own business and don't judge other people. And if you don't need a handicap spot, don't park in it.
Right. And then if you've got x-ray vision, you really don't know what's going on in somebody else's body.
Absolutely. Kathy, thanks for clearing that up. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Where
Goodbye.
Can I get x-ray vision? I want that.
Back of a comic book.
I'm getting that.
I know we're out of time, but Jim, you have like 30 seconds. Explain this. This is interesting.
My son's wife parked by some mom-and-pop place. They booted her car. She called my son, who owns a car place and a towing company. He picked up her car, brought it back to the shop, used some heavy-duty kind of drill and got the boot off, and then went back and dropped it on the counter of the store.
Oh, nice. That's nice.
Touché.
Yeah, he's a big, huge ex-Marine. He's about 6'6", and he weighs about 260 pounds.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
Here's your boot back.
Here's your
Love
message.
It. Thank you, Jim. Take care. All right, we'll find out what Roe and Anna have coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.